This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
From the Senate, the chamber has dismissed both articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. As expected, this is the destination we knew was a foregone conclusion. How exactly did we get here?
This was the trajectory from the jump. They were going to move past this as quickly as possible. Democrats made that a priority, saying just having an impeachment trial sets a bad precedent because they have argued from the start that this is a policy debate that Republicans weaponized and mobilized into an impeachment proceeding. The impeachment managers who walked over those articles through the Capitol that alleged willful and systemic failures by Alejandro Mayorkas to follow the law, that alleged a breach of trust, those 11 managers didn't present a case today. Democrats, using their majority in the U.S. Senate, were able to snuff out the Republicans' efforts to have an impeachment trial.
To a possible breakthrough on Capitol Hill, where the House has unveiled a plan to provide billions of dollars in emergency aid to Ukraine and Israel. But the move could endanger the Republican speaker's future.
On the same day, top military leaders warned Ukraine is running out of money and munitions. House Republicans unveiled a long-awaited, long-stalled plan to help Ukraine. And they think they've threaded a political needle here. They offer $61 billion for Ukraine, billions more for Israel, but they'll have separate votes, which could help embattled House Speaker Mike Johnson win enough votes from both parties. It also could fuel criticism from Republicans, including those trying to oust him, that don't want more money for Ukraine. Johnson says he doesn't need Democrats to intervene to save him, but multiple Democrats told CBS News they would if it meant more money for Ukraine. The bill got a big jolt. President Biden says he supports it, too.
There were dueling demonstrations on the campus of Columbia University. Pro-Palestinian students are calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, while Jewish students called for the end of anti-Semitic incidents. And then in Washington, Columbia's president was under fire during a congressional hearing.
An unsanctioned pro-Palestinian tent city erected on the campus of Columbia University as the university's president faces tough questioning on Capitol Hill.
The students don't seem to be afraid of your letters.
Chairwoman, I assure you, the students are not getting letters, as has previously been said. We have already suspended 15 students.
President Manushi Shafiq grilled by the House Education Committee for 5 hours over allegations that Columbia doesn't protect Jewish students from anti-Semitism, which even Columbia professors agree is out of control.
One of my students who wears a kippah was approached in the law school lobby by another student who said, F the Jews. Another was spat upon at a protest.
Professor David Scheiser heads Columbia's anti-Semitism task force, created after the October 7th attacks in Israel, which the NYPD confirms brought a spike in anti-Semitic incidents on campus.
Anti-Semitism has no place on our campus, and I am personally committed to doing everything I can to confront it directly.
Not so, said the committee, who blasted what they called Columbia's lack of accountability, focusing on Columbia professor Joseph Massad, who praised the October 7th terrorist attack, calling it, quote, awesome, and is still an active faculty member.
What truly speaks volumes is the moral compass of Columbia, that this rabid anti-Semite is still on your payroll today.
I am appalled by what he said.
Any consequences?
He has been spoken to.
So support of terrorism is acceptable if you're a Columbia professor?
Dr. Shafiq says Columbia is trying to balance allowing free speech while prohibiting hate speech, and agrees more needs to be done to protect students.
There's an immense amount of hostility towards Jews and pro-Israel students. I get looks. I'm genuinely scared in the classroom of repercussions if I give a pro-Israel, answer.
President Shafiq says the university has dismissed several professors who have made anti-Semitic remarks. They have also designated certain areas for protests and increased channels for reporting discriminatory behavior.
Days after the unprecedented barrage of missiles and drones targeted Israeli citizens, there's still no obvious sign of Israel's plans to retaliate, and there's no shortage of pressure from world leaders, including the foreign ministers of England and Germany, who traveled to Israel to counsel restraint. The Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was having none of it.
They also have all kinds of suggestions and advice. I appreciate it, but I want to make it clear. We will make our own decisions. and the state of Israel will do everything necessary to defend itself.
And as the Israeli war cabinet consumes itself with plans for Iran, in Gaza, the fighting continues. Near northern Gaza, a large explosion a few miles away from Nahal Oz, one of 16 kibbutz communities devastated on October 7th.
In Nahal Oz, they say this continues to happen. Hostilities are reducing in Gaza. The IDF has pulled out a lot of its footprint from the Gaza Strip, but there is still a lot of activity going on right now on a daily basis.
Israel opened a new corridor for humanitarian aid shipments in the south, part of its response to American complaints it wasn't doing enough for the people of Gaza. And now, with the White House pressuring Israel to avoid a further escalation with Iran, Israelis are telling U.S. officials they'll retaliate very carefully. Israel's goal is to reestablish deterrence against Iran, though the Supreme Leader says any retaliation will be met with force. Saturday was just a warning. If Iran attacked, it would be harsher.
Remember this, and this is a key part. The guy who is the radio voice is really the guy who is the soundtrack of a baseball team. And he is the one fans remember, and he's the one that city remembers, because in October, the TV guys go away. Network guys take over. They never have the great call. They never have a dramatic playoff call or a World Series call. They don't work those games. The radio guy works those games. And Sterling worked every one of those great Yankee wins and great Yankee World Series wins.
The Yankees are one out away from another World Championship. Now Rivera is set. And the 0-1 swung on, hit in the air to deep center. Bernie back, away back. He's there. He makes the catch. Ball game over. World Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it, New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues.
Yes, these little town blues. New York, New York. Well, I love that audio at the end of today's open, put together once again in brilliant fashion by executive producer Justin Ellick. You know that voice, New York. That was the great Mike Francesa. And that was taken from a television show called High Heat, which is on daily 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the MLB Network, and it's hosted by Francesa's old WFAN radio partner, the legendary Christopher Mad Dog Russo. And Russo is going to join us today. Well, how about that?
Said good morning.
Those guys worked together for four New York Yankee World Championships. Joe Torre, of course, 96. 98, 99, and 2000, two over Atlanta, one over San Diego, and one over the Mets. And when John Sterling immediately retired a couple of days ago, Francesa went on Russo's TV show, the baseball show, and they had a great conversation. Mike made a great point there, too, that, you know, you get the postseason, and the TV guys are out. Like Michael Kay, he's going to be out when the Yankees get the postseason because TBS has the game and then eventually ends up on a major network, I guess, Fox. So the radio guy, he sticks around. So Sterling, to Francesa's point, he's right, becomes the voice for all those great Joe Torre Yankee World Series teams, all of them.
Look, Mike, you know, we've had differences. Mike was spot on with that one. You know, the TV guys, they vamoose. They're gone. And, hey, look, Sterling's the voice. That's all there is to it. You know, be honest. Let's be honest.
Thank you, Dog. We will talk to you later on this morning. Actually, Dog, I'll keep you around. I got one more for you.
Let's go.
All right. So Mike also discussed John Sterling's iconic calls. And again, if you don't know, Sterling retired immediately on Monday. There'll be a beautiful ceremony Saturday before the Yankees-Tampa Bay game in the Bronx. And they talked about all these great iconic calls, you know, A-Bomb from A-Rod and Bam Tino and El Capitan. But Burn Baby Burn came up, and Francesa said to Christopher Mad Dog Russo, "You're the guy. It's not Sterling. The guy that gets the credit for these home run calls is you," because according to Mike, when the Yankees were winning and Sterling was coming up with all of these, Mike and the Mad Dog was the most listened to sports talk show in the world, and Russo would play the hell out of Sterling's cuts, and that would inspire John Sterling to do more. But Francesa had one vivid memory, and it wasn't even a home run. Cut number 17.
Good morning. How are you today,
Hello,
pal, okay?
Dog. I'll tell you, I thought of you after I heard the news about John. And first, let me wish John well publicly for his wonderful career. And I hope he enjoys his golden years and has a nice time. I'm telling you, Dog, you should take a bow for this, because I've said this. I said it on my podcast. And this is true. The guy who really got those home run calls started was you, because you were the one who started just wearing out the Sterling calls, and then he started doing these home run calls, and I remember you playing them one after another after another, and I can tell you this, the call that I remember the most, the one that was my favorite, wasn't even a home run. It was a triple. It was a bases-clearing triple by Bernie Williams in the eighth inning against Tampa Bay, and he went crazy with Bernie Goes Boom.
Bernie Goes Boom! Burn, baby, burn!
And you must have played it 25 times that day.
I remember
wearing it out, and that's the one that I remember first more than any of the home run calls, was that Bernie Goes Boom triple that he hit. And I'm telling you, folks, the guy who got this whole thing started was the Dog.
We'll talk to Christopher Mad Dog Russo again coming up in about an hour and a half, 7:45 this morning, see if he can confirm or deny Mike Francesa's contention. But for me, the biggest story of the day is Columbia University. It's just unbelievable growing up in New York, and we had all these great schools. You know, somebody sent me a direct message yesterday. I was in the gym on my Instagram account. Again, my Instagram account is private. Had no choice. Too many death threats and nasty stuff on there, so I have to accept you at this point, but I accept people every day. Just go to @Rosenberg.Sydney, @Rosenberg.Sydney. Send me a request, and odds are, unless you're a complete scumbag, I'll accept you, and you'll be on the page. But Adam Lipke sent me this yesterday. He said, Binghamton University. All of my nephews and nieces went to Binghamton. You know, where they rate the top state schools in the country every year, Binghamton is right up there with Albany, Virginia, and others. He says Binghamton, perhaps the most Jewish university, just passed a BDS resolution. 25% to 30% of the population at that college is Jewish. I feel ashamed today to be a graduate of this formerly prestigious university. That's Binghamton. NYU is a complete disaster, and now Columbia. Columbia, for many, many, many years, and deservedly so, Ivy League school, considered one of the best in the country, has become an absolute disgrace. And this president of this university, I guess the name is Shafiq, speaking yesterday up on the Hill, getting grilled. You remember Elise Stefanik a couple of months ago grilled the presidents of Harvard, Pennsylvania, And what was the third school there?
MIT.
MIT, thank you. And two of them got fired, but not really, because they stayed on the payroll and collected a check. And that gay lady, that disgrace at Harvard, made about $1 million and still making $1 million. So that was a dog and pony show. They didn't do anything. So this Shafiq lady is up there, and they're kicking her ass, and deservedly so. The former New York Jet, by the way, former New York Jet out of the great state of Utah, Burgess Owens, was great yesterday. So was Tim Walberg. So they bring up this one teacher at Columbia, and his name is Joseph Mossad. For those that don't know, Joseph Mossad, after October 7th, called the Hamas attacks awesome. So you would think when this president of Columbia is up there on the Hill yesterday talking about how they've fired faculty members, they suspended 15 students, that the easy call was, well, Mossad must be gone, right? Think again, Lewis. This is the president of Columbia University, the School of Hate, talking specifically about Mossad. And listen to her answer. It's pathetic. Cut number 11.
Speaks volumes. Is the moral compass of Columbia that this rabid anti-Semite is still on your payroll today?
I am appalled by what he said.
Any consequences?
He has been spoken to.
Stop it right there. He's been spoken to. What are the consequences for this anti-Semite professor who called the October 7th attacks by Hamas awesome? And the repercussion is, quote, he's been spoken to. No, many thoughts?
It is amazing that he's still on the staff there. Clearly, I guess he was chair of one of the departments.
Yeah, he was.
And he no longer is that, so they took that away from him. But he's still a professor at Columbia today.
You know, my theory about what happened with Iran and Israel, you heard in the open Bibi Netanyahu say that we're going to make our own decisions, and we expect that Israel will retaliate in some fashion. Basically, he said to the prime ministers of the UK and Germany, stay out of it. But yet he says that on one hand. On the other hand, he is clearly nervous about the United States, because on one hand, he says we'll do what we want. On the other hand, Bibi says we'll take care of Iran, quote unquote, very carefully. That's not tough talk. So the United States is still in Bibi's head. So this theory of mine that the United States was in on this Iran attack, more than in on it, basically choreographed it, continues to be talked about. This is a story in yesterday's Washington Examiner. Thank you, Isaac Krinsky. And it reads, Biden must resign if he greenlit Iran's strike on Israel. I'll read you the first paragraph. An anonymous Turkish diplomat told Reuters this week that Turkey played the role of a back-channel intermediary between the United States and Iran in the run-up to the Iranian missile strike in Israel. According to the source, Tehran informed Turkey of its plans for the strike in advance in an effort to limit the potential for further escalation. In response, the U.S. allegedly conveyed to Tehran through Ankara that any action would have to be, quote, within certain limits. Now, the White House has denied the claim, but if I could figure this out on Sunday morning, and I'm a moron, if I could figure this out, then certainly the White House denying this claim means nothing to me. Where are you in this storm? Because everybody else seems to be with me on this. Craig Kelly, Rudy Giuliani, Curtis Sliwa, David Friedman, Caroline Glick, Alex Trayman, and others. Where are you in this?
I think you have to still connect all the dots, and I'm confused about who benefits on what side and who knew what when. That's what I really want to know.
What are you confused about? The last thing the United States wants is a full escalation war between Iran and Israel. I'll tell you why. Because they are lying to folks when they say they support Israel, but they're doing it, right? Biden will say, hey, we're supporting Israel. Blinken will say we're supporting Israel. They don't want to see Israelis die. On the other hand, if you listen to David Friedman on this show a couple of days ago, Trump's ambassador to Israel years ago, he said, listen, the United States has all the motivation in the world to do this and to lie to you because of oil. Because back in the midterms in 2022, when the United States was running low, very low, they had no choice but to use some of their reserves. You remember that? And that was an effort just to make sure they won the midterms, and they did. Now the oil situation is once again an issue. The election is coming up in November, and David Friedman, much smarter than you or me, Noam, said that is great motivation for Joe Biden to get involved, make sure Iran doesn't take it too far, and make sure the Israelis don't respond.
Right, and I get that part of the story, but here's the part where I'm lost on. How much or all of it was shared with Israel, and was Bibi Netanyahu in on this? The fact that not one missile really got through, not one drone got through, and then we look just at yesterday. There was a Hezbollah attack on Israel yesterday. 18 people were injured by one drone attack. Yet, last week when they sent over 200 drones and hundreds of missiles, nobody was injured. So did Bibi Netanyahu know the entire Iranian plan as well? And was he in it on it as well?
Well, that may be true, too. I don't know. But we're not talking about what Israel knew, because you may be right.
I mean, but
you may be right.
Everybody's in on it. That's what it seems like to me. And then you say, okay, so now will they everybody be in on Israel's response to Iran, and then those will just go away? But maybe, you know, clearly the U.S. said to Israel that Iran's going to have some response to the fact that you shot a missile into that consulate in Damascus. There has to be a price to be paid. But did they then share all that information with Israel about how the attack was going to be laid out? Because the fact that nothing got through, not one thing, yet yesterday Hezbollah sends over a drone and 18 people are injured. I don't know. There's something very fishy about that.
No, that is all true. And, you know, people like John Catsimatidis and Curtis Sliwa and others, many others, actually, even Chuck Todd in a private text to me said, I got to tell you, this seems more like a movie than a real war. Now, I felt badly saying that because I was in contact with my friend Yehuda Honickman, who lives in Jerusalem. I was in contact with my friend Alex Treyman, who lives in Jerusalem. I was in contact with the great one, Mark Levin, who was in Jerusalem. And they were scared to death. They were in bomb shelters for upwards of 3 hours. And just two nights after the attacks, Honickman's daughter woke up screaming and crying. She's still freaked out. So to say it was a movie is not fair to the Israelis that had to go through it. But from the outside looking in, it looked like a movie. And that brings us to this segment yesterday with the brilliant Curtis Sliwa. I'll give you three words. Wag the dog. Cut three.
Sid, this is a page right out of Wag the Dog. You remember? With Dustin Hoffman and Robert De Niro.
One video of one bomb, Mr. Moss. The American people bought that war. Mm-hmm. War is show business.
You want me to produce your war? Not a war. It's a pageant. We need a theme, a song, some visuals. We need, you know, it's a pageant.
It's a pageant.
It's a pageant. That's what it is.
Country's a war.
The Wag the Dog Syndrome. In fact, in honor of you, Sid, on my Rip and Read Monday and yesterday, I did Wag the Dog 1 and 2 as it relates to the fake attack by Iran. Which, by the way, on their TV, their Iranian government-controlled TV, they were showing forest fires that had occurred in Chile 3 months before.
All right, there is Curtis Sliwa, who will join me as he does every morning coming up in about 45 minutes. That wraps up our first segment. We're up to a great start on a Thursday morning. We got a big show coming your way. Tom Sullivan, Mr. Breezy Point, running again for Assembly. He got cheated last time. He actually won. He beat Stacey Pfeiffer Amato, but Stacey and her mother, two cheaters, stole it from Tom Sullivan. Sullivan running again will join me at 6:45. Curtis Sliwa, 7:15. Christopher Mad Dog Russo coming up at 7:45. The man himself, John Catsimatidis, he's coming up at 8:15. The segment of the week, Bill O'Reilly, he'll be here at 8:45. And the great Post columnist, Michael Goodwin, coming up at 9:35. The number is always 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Some U2 for you. Sunday, Bloody Sunday. This speaks to the Israel-Iran war, I guess. Nobody died, but U2, 6:27 on a Thursday morning. Welcome back to Sid and Friends in the Morning.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, it's Lou Dobbs for Priority Gold, America's precious metals dealer. These are volatile times with high inflation, soaring debt, wars on multiple continents, and rising financial stress. Central banks are buying gold to diversify their reserves, so are many Americans. Call Priority Gold and find out how precious metals can help you diversify your portfolio. They're highly rated and happy to help. Call 1-866-303-6357 or get a free gold guide at PriorityGoldGuide.com. That's PriorityGoldGuide.com.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Fleetwood Mac classic. Yes, thunder only happens when it's raining, and I know Monday and Tuesday were gorgeous, and I'm sporting a beautiful tan to prove it, but man, it feels like every day I walk out and it's raining. Every day. I know this April showers nonsense. It's like months of this. I don't know, I've had enough. So today, ladies and gentlemen, I know I make a much bigger deal of this than most adults do. I get it. There's people I know that hate birthdays. Bernard, for example, God rest his soul, never told anybody about his birthday. People thought it was New Year's because he lied about it. It was in October, of course.
Nobody knew his age.
Right. He was 65, like, but yeah. Lou, same thing with you. You're not a big birthday guy.
No.
Yeah.
I just, with my friends, with close with you guys, it's fine.
That's it, though. Donald Trump hates birthdays. I remember one time Andrew Giuliani told me a story that they were on the golf course one day. It was Trump's birthday. And Andrew said, "Happy birthday, Mr. President," and Trump ripped his head off. So not everybody loves their birthday. I don't really either. But I got to give my beautiful wife, Danielle, credit. She kind of makes a big deal about it. And my kids do, my 20-year-old daughter, Ava, my 15-year-old son, Gabriel. So today will be my last show ever at the age of 56. Today I'm Lawrence Taylor. Pete Morgan will get this. Today I'm Lawrence Taylor. Tomorrow I'm Byron Hunt. And when I turn 58, of course, I'll be Carl Banks. Those are the uniform numbers of former Giant linebackers. Today I'm LT. Tomorrow I'm Byron Hunt. So tomorrow's the big day. Tonight I'll do, a little celebrating. My monthly men's dinner. My buddies Keith Kantrowitz, Anthony Carone, Michael Kemper, Mark Orringer, usually Governor David Patterson, sometimes the mayor, although I drew the line today and said he can't come. That's a true story. And a bunch of us get together, and we just talk about a whole bunch of nonsense and have a good time. So we'll start with that tonight. And then tomorrow, my actual birthday with Danielle, Ave, and Gabe, I'm going to go to a Shabbat dinner, which we do a lot of since October the 7th. But this one's a little different. This isn't Dove Hyken's house. This isn't Zev Brenner's house. It's not even my shul in the Ponset. This one is a fancy dinner catered by my friend John's restaurant, Claudette's. I know you know Claudette's, Lou. It's very, very good. It's great. And it's at the Rockaway Hotel, the very swanky Rockaway Hotel. And all these influencers like Melissa Chapman and other great Israeli voices are going to be there. And they've been selling tickets to this for a long time, Shabbat dinner at the Rockaway Hotel. And if you're listening right now, you should come, because now that Shabbat dinner is a Shabbat dinner slash Sid Rosenberg birthday dinner.
So, but you're not, you don't really care too much.
I don't really care, no.
Did they put that on the flyer?
They may have in the last 2 days. I don't know. Oh. That'll draw more attention than the Shabbat dinner.
Right.
It's like I was in the gym yesterday, and, you know, I love Burn Fitness, my buddy Sean Cerrone. And he said, you know, I work out almost every day anyway, but he said, make sure you come here Friday. I said, well, I come every day. I work out. He goes, I know, but sometimes you go 2 days on, 1 day off, 3 days on, 1 day off. Make sure you're here Friday because they want to have a cake at the gym. Oh, wow. And at that point, I should have said, now you're being said, stop. But I didn't, of course.
You were thinking, that's it?
Yeah. Right,
okay. No, all right, I'll deal with that.
You know what? The right dollar really nailed it yesterday. Artie was on the show talking about Trump. We'll get to Trump in a second. But he brought up my birthday, and he said, Sid, you got to do it the Brooklyn way. He has famed defense attorney, my good buddy Arthur Idala Lewis, cut number one. My dear, dear friend, the amazing defense attorney Arthur Idala. Artie, good morning, buddy. How are you?
So what we say in Brooklyn is happy birth week. So you should be celebrating every night.
Yeah, I mean,
in other words, if you just think about it, our days are numbered, Sid. So if you only celebrate on your actual birthday, maybe you have only like whatever, 30, 40 birthdays left. But if you do the birth week,
yeah,
then you can have like 30, 40. Like, you know, you really have a good old time.
30 or 40, I guess Artie's got me living till 87 or 97. I don't see that. But thank you for that. Now, talking about Artie, and today is a big day because President Trump is back for day three. Remember, you heard the schedule early on. Jason Miller was on this show and told you that President Trump will be in court Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So he's off Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and he'll spend a lot of that time campaigning and doing his personal stuff. Maybe playing golf. I don't know. He did that great thing on Tuesday night, and the New York Republicans Club was actually a part of that. They made it happen when he went to Jose Alba's old bodega and spoke to the folks up in Harlem, a brilliant move by Trump. So Trump is back today for day three of his trial as they continue to select a jury. They got nobody Monday. They ended up with seven jurors on Tuesday. They're more than halfway there. And I spoke to Artie yesterday about the process and what it's like trying to select the jury as we get set again for day three for Donald Trump. This is Idala, cut number two.
I wanted the jury. I want the conductor of a train. I want a bus driver. I want a blue-collar guy. I want someone, when I say to them, Mrs. Schwartz, where do you get your news from? She goes, Mr. Idala, at my age, I don't watch the news anymore. I just stay home. I take care of my husband. I take care of my kids. I cook. That's who I want on the jury. So, you know, but they only get 10 challenges. So you get all these people in the box. You get to challenge certain people for cause. So if someone says, I hate Donald Trump, or I don't think I can be fair, you say, Judge, I need you to strike them off. And the judge can strike them off, and he has unlimited powers to strike people off. But if there's no obvious reason to take them off, each side only gets 10 opportunities because it's such a small crime. When I tried the Harvey Weinstein case, I had 20 challenges. When it's a murder case, it's 20 challenges. But this is such a BS crime. Under the statute, you only get 10 challenges. The judge could give them more, but he won't give them more. So that you have to be really judicious in who you strike and who you don't strike. You know, it's not a jury selection process. It's really a jury deselection process. You don't tell the judge, I want these people. You tell the judge, I don't want these people. The prosecutor says, I don't want these people, and it's whoever is left becomes the jury.
That's a great job right there by Artie Idala. That sets us up again. Two great segments for a wonderful guest list today. Tom Sullivan, you know, listen, I'm friends with the Sullivan family, Michael and Brian for 45 years, Tommy, Danny, all of them. And Thomas will be running for political office for the third time this November, second consecutive time running for assembly. He won last time. There's no doubt about it. You can bash Trump all you want if you think Trump lost and he's a liar. Tom Sullivan won. He won. He was up, I believe, 300 votes over this Stacey Pfeiffer Amato, and all of a sudden that 300 became 30, then it became 5, and then out of the blue, Stacey Pfeiffer Amato won. And we know who Amato's parents are, especially her mother. So she cheated. The bottom line is she cheated. And I got to tell you, I can't stand it. Every time I go to a rally with Curtis or any political event in my neighborhood in Queens, who was standing right next to Stacey Amato? Joanne Arriola. I don't get it. She's a Democrat. You're a Republican. And don't tell me we all work together. That's nonsense. So anyway, Amato cheated, and Sullivan, he's going to try it again, and we're going to make sure this time that Amato can't steal it. Tom Sullivan is the right choice. Tom Sullivan served this country proudly in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and Kuwait, and on 9/11, happened to be at the World Trade Center and literally threw bodies over his shoulder and saved lives. What does Amato do besides eat? That's it. And get stupid haircuts. Stop laughing, Norm. It's true. So she ain't going to do it this time. We're not going to allow it. So Tom Sullivan coming up next. Then you get Curtis Sliwa, Christopher Mad Dog Russo, John Catsimatidis, Bill O'Reilly, Michael Goodwin. Right before Joe Nolan, let's do our first 77 WABC minicast clip of the day. Get the whole story in under 10 New York minutes. Download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and get the max out of mini. Today's minicast, as it is every day, Katz and Cosby, 5 p.m. weekdays on WABC. Hear John and Rita talk with Andrew McCarthy, not the guy from Less Than Zero, about Alejandro Mayorkas.
Con job that's another been played on this is that there was no crime, as in penal crime, like I used to prosecute when I was a prosecutor in court. But the impeachment clause is not for high crimes and misdemeanors are not penal crimes. They're, as Hamilton said in the Federalist Papers, they're political offenses committed by high-ranking officials. And they're more in the nature of military justice concepts like dereliction of duty than penal law concepts. There was clearly grounds to impeach him.
If you had an accident, trust Gabo Law, personal injury and medical malpractice attorneys with decades of experience who will provide the attention you deserve and deliver the best possible results in the shortest amount of time. Gabo Law has recovered millions for their clients, and they will be able to help you. But don't take our word for it. Read their five-star reviews from former clients on Google, Avvo, and Facebook. Call Gabo Law today, 800-560-0214 for a free consultation or email them at info@gabolaw.com. That's GABOlaw.com. Gabo Law, where winning is no accident.
This is Sid on Sports.
Oh my goodness!
Sponsored by Peerless Boilers on 77 WABC.
Justin Ellick here with your bottom of the hour sports update, sponsored by Pete Morgan and Peerless Boilers. Go to PeerlessBoilers.com, PavilionTankless.com, find a dealer near you. They're the world's best-built boilers up north in Toronto. Aaron Judge broke a 4-all tie with a 2-run single in the ninth. Juan Soto, Giancarlo Stanton hit solo home runs, and the New York Yankees rallied to beat the Toronto Blue Jays 6-4, avoiding their first sweep of the season. Judge was 0-for-12 against Toronto in the series before coming through on a full-count pitch from left-hander Tim Mejza with two outs and the bases loaded. The hit meant New York finished 3-3 on the trip to Cleveland and Toronto. Soto had three hits, his third three-hit game of the season. He drove in two and reached base five times. The Yankees trailed 4-1 through seven innings, but Soto homered off Genesis Cabrera in the eighth, and Stanton connected off Eric Swanson to begin the ninth, a few batters before Judge's big hit. Yankee starter Stroman allowed two runs and six hits in five and a third innings against his former team. He walked two and struck out two. Yanks will enjoy an off day today before opening up a weekend set at home against the division rival Tampa Bay
Bay Rays. As for the Metropolitans,
by the way, the Yankees still have the best record. I know it's early at 17 games.
Yeah,
in the American League.
Yeah,
even I believe that's true, right?
Even with losing three straight,
12-5. And the Indians are playing very good baseball. They're 12-6.
13-5 now, I believe.
13-5. Yes. There you go.
After last night's win. And your Mets keep rolling here. Starlin Marte hit his 150th career homer, powering the Mets to a 9-1 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates and a sweep of the three-game set. Tyrone Taylor hit a two-run single in the sixth, and Harrison Bader homered on the next pitch for the Mets, who went 5-1 on a homestand against the Pirates and Kansas City Royals to improve to 10-3.
You know that Harrison Bader, you just mentioned him, he hit the home run for the Mets yesterday?
Yes.
And Curtis is going to love to hear this because he keeps bringing up the fact that Bader is Jewish. Not only is Harrison Bader Jewish, but do you realize that the belt, you know, ball players wear belts,
yes,
to keep their baseball pants up?
Mm-hmm.
His belt has the Star of David.
Yes.
The Maggota is on his belt.
I know.
So Harrison Bader, not just a Jew, but he tells people,
right,
I'm Jewish.
It's a big Maggen David, too.
Huge one. Yeah. So he is now far and away my favorite player, not just on the Mets, but in baseball,
mm-hmm,
Harrison Bader. He's got a set of Beitzim, which in Hebrew means balls.
Oh, how about that? On the hardwood in the NBA, two playing games in the East last night. The Bulls eliminated the Hawks, final 131-116, and the Sixers beat the Heat 105-104. Philly now moves on to face our 2-seed Knicks in the first round, and Miami lives to see another day. They'll hang back to face Chicago in an elimination game to see who draws 1-seed Boston in the first round. That decisive playing game will take place tomorrow night, along with the final playing game out west. That'll decide if the Kings or Pelicans will have the pleasure of facing 1-seed OKC in the first round. Finally, on the ice in Elmont, Simon Holmstrom scored the go-ahead goal in the third period. Sorokin stopped Sidney Crosby on a late penalty shot. And the playoff-bound Islanders edged the Pittsburgh Penguins 5-4 in their final regular season game. They have a Saturday 5 p.m. puck drop in Carolina against the Hurricanes for Game 1. Puck drop time also been announced for Game 1 for the Rangers. They're going to be Sunday at 3 p.m. against the Washington Capitals. That's sports sponsored by Pete Morgan and Peerless Boilers. Go to peerlessboilers.com, paviliontankless.com to find a dealer near you. They're the world's best-built boilers. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Entertaining and informative.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Everywhere is freaks and heroes, dykes and fairies. Sanity. Tax the rich, feed the poor, tell there are no rich no more.
Song. This is a great song. In the movie I was in, Inside Man, the true story about the Gemini Lounge, Danny Yeh movie, when I played the cousin, Dracula. And they use this song kind of like the way you use the Cream song, I guess, in Goodfellas. It's a great song. It is a great morning, 6:52, my last day at the age of 56. And, you know, I think a lot about my prior birthdays, and I go back to one very special birthday. And when I say special, it's because of the circumstances. Let me take you back to the COVID days. So my birthday comes April the 19th, and there's nowhere to go because everybody closed because of Andrew Cuomo's horrible job. And whoever else, de Blasio, all these idiots that shut down the city, shut down the country, shut down the world, when, as I told you from day one, I was even more adamant than Bernie, the whole thing was a sham. Yes, people did die, I'm sorry. Most of them were old, had comorbidities, were fat, heart problems. Very few young, healthy people died, but that didn't mean I could celebrate my birthday at a place I wanted to. So here's how I did it. I called Mike Sullivan, and I said, look, we want Brennan and Carr. They make the best roast beef in the world on the corner of Nostrand and Avenue U. But I couldn't go inside. They were closed. So he says, come to the parking lot, pick up your food, and my brother Thomas is going to greet you in the parking lot. So we show up. At the time, we still had our Denali. It was a big truck. And it's me, Danielle, Ava, and Gabe. And sure enough, in a very desolate area in Brooklyn, nobody was outside. It was COVID. Thomas Sullivan comes outside of Brennan and Carr with about 10 bags of food, literally 10 bags of food, cheese beefs, beef broth, fries, mozzarella sticks, you name it. And then the coup de grace, a big, beautiful birthday cake. So even during the worst of times during COVID, my friend Tom Sullivan made sure I enjoyed my birthday. I think it was my 52nd birthday. Tomorrow I'll be 57. With that said, here he is, my dear friend Thomas Sullivan. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Howard.
I'm sure you... Say that again. Your phone is kind of breaking up.
It seemed like forever ago that was, 5 years ago in the parking lot.
Right, but you and Mike ended up making it a pretty nice birthday considering the circumstances. So the day before my next birthday, thank you so much.
Yeah, it was like going to a tailgate, you know. You had a couple of people over there eating in the car. You had the back open to your truck to give us a little shelter. And we had some, I remember, we had some blankets around our shoulders. And
your brother Mike.
You know, listen, but you said it. You got to make the best of it, right? Even though we may not have, what was going on at the time was pretty interesting times in our life, that, you know, stories you could tell your kids, and your son Gabe was there. He got to experience it. And but this is what you do, right? You make the best of it, and that's what you and your family did, and we tried to accommodate you guys.
Yeah, your brother Michael just sent me a nice picture of you and I from the parking lot from that day. He sent it to me just now. So you know, Sunday morning I woke up, Thomas, and you know, I unveiled my theory on Twitter. I did a video about how I thought the United States was clearly in on this Iran attack. In fact, I went as far as saying they choreographed the whole thing, which a lot of people found blasphemous. They were horrified. How can you say that? But now more and more people are coming to my defense. But you told me on Sunday you had your own theory about Iran. What would that be?
Well, let me take a half a step back. So I don't have my own theory. The problem is, when you don't act decisively and quickly, you leave it up for subject, and then everybody's got to come up with their theory to figure out why this happened or didn't happen, right? So in my case, I know the way you're taught, right? I had the privilege of going to the United States Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania for 2 years. And there's no doubt that when certain scenarios arise, you already have predetermined plans on how you're going to strike, what you're going to strike with, and what targets you've already selected. So when that doesn't happen, it leaves it up to question. Now you got the public questioning and everybody coming up with a theory. And so back to what I was saying, it's not my theory. And we go back to Ronald Reagan. What would Ronald Reagan have done? And I would tell you now that there would be seven ships laying at the bottom of the Iranian harbor. You know, they got about five frigates, which are pretty darn good, to be honest with you. And they got about three or four corvette style, right? No aircraft carriers, no battleships, no missile destroyers per se. But that would have been the first target. Why? Minimize civilian casualties, extremely costly in both money and loss of capability on the Iranian Navy, which are, by the way, harassing ships and seizing ships out in the open waters there. So it's either the seaport or the airfields. Now, why that wasn't done, this is why you leave it up. Does Israel not have the capability? I would beg to differ that they sure do have that ability to knock out those facilities. So you don't want to lose the will of the people by, you know, human suffering, taking out, you know, water and bridges and things of that, and electric power plants. And I hear some pretty smart people talking about attacking the nuclear facility. That would be global condemnation on a scale you couldn't possibly imagine. So why, for the love of God, they didn't attack, you know, military targets where you know there's military people and minimal civilian casualties to none, I just don't get it.
I agree.
It's a hard attack.
Yeah. And by the way, just yesterday, Hezbollah up in the north attacked not one but two Israeli military targets. This is Thomas Sullivan. He's running once again in New York's 23rd District for Assembly. He won last time, but Stacey Amato and her mother cheated, and they stole it from him. And, you know, as you're talking specifically about the ships and all the weaponry, I'm going to myself, this guy, he knows all this stuff. He served in Iraq. He served in Afghanistan. He served in Kuwait. What the hell does Stacey Amato do? She goes to Lenny's, sits there with Areola, and talks about how horrible people like Curtis and Sid Rosenberg are. You serve this country. You save lives at the World Trade Center. And I know you got cheated that last election, just like Trump feels, just like Carrie Lake feels. Does that fuel you to really go out and kick some ass this November?
No, that's exactly what has been done. And we've been extremely busy. You know, last night I was out in Baldwin, Long Island, at the Nassau Spring committee meeting there. You had 350 Republicans led by Joe Cairo. Weeks before that, I was in Staten Island meeting Mike Riley, who offered to help me out. Weeks before that, it was Lester Chang in Brooklyn. And then I get all these questions. What am I doing in Brooklyn, in Staten Island, in Nassau County? I said, I'm going anywhere and everywhere I can gain support from my fellow Republicans that will do that. And, you know, Joanne Areola is certainly helping me on this go around. I know you'll be pleased to hear that. She's been a big help, and I'll be with her Saturday. I need you to know that.
I know there were different times.
So, and I will be with Joanne this Saturday. We're doing a little community project there in Bell Harbor, actually, up on the seawall. So, and then I'll head to Broad Channel for the opening of the sports day there. They do an amazing job there, the Broad Channel Athletic Association, and they'll have their opening day parade. So we're out every night. So, you know, whether it's Baldwin, Long Island last night, as well as Belmore. I had my own event in Belmore at American Legion last night. I am building the team, building the coalition, gaining support. And listen, a win for me in here in Queens is a win for all Republicans in Albany. We have to break this supermajority up there.
Agreed. Did you raise the flag at Cali's on Sunday? Tommy kept telling me about that, but I had a big thing with Joe Biden.
No, not yet. That'll be on Flag Day.
Oh, Flag Day. Okay.
That'll be coming up.
Okay. I was with Dove Hykind on Sunday night thinking about you and talking about Dove Hykind. I remember how excited you were a couple of years ago when I put Dove in touch with you. And Dove is a huge Thomas Sullivan fan. And we know there's a lot of Jewish people in Queens. And we can make sure that Thomas Sullivan gets the Jewish vote. That'll be huge. And I mean huge for your campaign. So I know you've got a special place in your heart for Dove Hykind.
No, listen, I went up to Whitestone last week to hear him speak, and I've been other places, and he's been back and forth to Israel. We've been texting. And I'm proud to say now, after about a year and a half now, that I can call him my friend. I've been to his home. We've broken bread together. We've had one-on-one discussions, meaningful discussions. We've gone through that book, the book that he's put together, unbelievable book. And we've shared a lot about each other's experiences and certainly political views and where we stand and how we got here today. And, you know, I admire him. It wasn't easy what he did, but I will tell you this, you know, just because he's reached out to me and he's said some kind words about me and he's willing to show support for somebody who supports Israel and the Jewish people in the community, the hate that he's been getting by some of these people is shameful. That's not what I know, and some of it's coming from the Jewish community. That's not what I know of the Jewish people.
No. Listen, Tom.
You could be disappointed.
They're vicious. They are vicious. Jews are their own worst enemies.
I say that all the time. I'm as proud of Jewish guy as they come, just like Dove. Jews are their own worst enemies. I got 2 minutes to go. I got to get to something important. Look,
sure.
We know what we're dealing with here on the Queens side. You live in Breezy Point. I live in Bell Harbor. We know what we're dealing on the Brooklyn side, Mill Basin, that whole Kings Plaza area, and that is this illegal crisis. It's a mess. And Curtis keeps telling me that there's more tents going up. There's 2,000 now. There may be 3,000 now. You're going to meet with Joanne, and I'm really happy that Joanne is helping you. You're my brother, so I'll give her credit for that. But the truth is, she's done a horrendous job through this whole illegals crisis. She's done nothing. She hired bad attorneys, went to D.C. and wasted taxpayer money. She's done nothing. It's actually getting worse. How can Thomas Sullivan help us in Brooklyn and Queens with this mess?
Well, number one is getting elected. You know, that's the first and foremost of everything. Otherwise, I'm just another voice out there on the corner of Avenue U and Flatbush, trying to get your message across to the people. People really have to understand the situation over there. Floyd Bennett Field is so bad. So here's something I learned, right? Because I see forklifts, I see construction materials, I see all kinds of, so I jump right to the assumption that we're building more tents, right?
We are.
More people, more tents. So somebody gave me a call and they said, look, that's not accurate. There's not more tents. It's they're building better tents, more resilient tents.
Stop it right there. When you say somebody gave you a call, you're going to have to out. That was Joanne, right? Just be honest.
Huh?
Was that Joanne?
No. It was somebody else, another civic leader, to straighten that out. And I said, you know, I don't know if that makes me feel better. Well, I do know it doesn't make me feel better that they're building something more permanent. I just also found out veterans got $5 million across New York State for veteran events. And I was an American, 104-year-old American VFW post that needed a lot of work. And a council woman said, we can give you $5,000. That place needed $500,000. Mm. They're putting $14 million into Floyd Bennett Field, where our priorities are shot. This is not an easy pill to swallow for the veteran community. They don't ask much. You know, I'm a representative of the veteran community as the commander of a local post. I go to my meetings up in Albany with the Department of New York. They don't ask for a whole lot. It really is amazing. They just ask for a little help so they can help their fellow veterans. And they're throwing tens of millions of dollars of non-citizens. And when I tell you I go up to these places, I see 98-year-olds wheelchair bound. I see young soldiers wheelchair bound, veterans. And the money is not flowing in. This is absurd to be seeing what's happening with the irresponsible spending of New York State and U.S. taxpaying citizens, money being spent. We're all compassionate about it. Make no bones about it, but the priorities are lost. And they've created this disaster up in the White House.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the veterans. I don't have compassion. Call me a bad guy the day before my birthday. I'm sick of it. I really am. I'm sick of seeing homeless people who I never liked before, by the way. Now I love them. Eating off the streets. They're Americans. I'm sick of seeing veterans being treated poorly like you just talked about. So I don't have a lot of compassion. I really don't. They should be back where they came from and not here. That's not our responsibility. And the mayor goes on and on how dignified we are. I don't want to be dignified, okay? I want to be selfish. I want to take care of Brooklyn people, Queens people, veterans, homeless people. I don't need to save the freaking world. But hey, what could I tell you? Tom Sullivan, you're my choice. You're going to be Brooklyn and Queens' choice. You're going to win that election. You won it last time. We're going to make sure they don't steal it from you this time. That is a great, great appearance this morning. You know I love you, Thomas. Thank you so much.
Hey, take care. Happy birthday tomorrow if I don't talk to you in person.
All right, thank you. There he is, running in District 23. If he's not your choice, folks, your priorities are really effed up. Talking about priorities, Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait, save lives, and he cares. Amato, she don't care. Tom Sullivan cares. All the Sullivans care. Hour 2 with Curtis coming up.
In the morning.
But you say he just a friend.
Oh, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
Oh, unbelievable, this Catherine Mayer. Not bad looking, but what a douche. Back in 2022, she's the CEO of NPR. She said, and I quote, in 2022, facts are a distraction. So she's getting hammered now because the NPR CEO, excuse me, the NPR guy who ran the newsroom, he resigned yesterday, Yuri Berliner. They suspended him for 5 days because he said, this place is liberal whack crazy. I think he mentioned there were 82 people in the newsroom, and every one of them were wacko Democrats. So they suspended him, and then he said, F you, I quit. But this Catherine Mayer is coming under some very serious scrutiny, deservedly so. Like I said, she's a douchebag. Ted Cruz actually hammered her yesterday. Let's play this. This is a cut 19. Ted Cruz all over the CEO of NPR.
Listen, I would eliminate the funding for NPR tomorrow. That's the right thing to do. We shouldn't be in the business of funding NPR. You're a leftist. Why wouldn't you be willing to use taxpayer dollars to fund a propaganda outlet for your view?
So I'm going to talk to John Catsimatidis at 8:15. NPR, they're going to be gone. I know they do well in the ratings. I know they do. They're neck and neck with me. And they hammer overnights. But they're going to be gone. CNN, they announced yesterday, the guy that runs that, Thompson, they're just about done. They're going to start to just stream stuff online. There'll be no more TV channel. These are all opportunities for cats to gobble these things up and make Red Apple Media even bigger. Well, how much bigger can it get when you got Curtis Sliwa and Sid Rosenberg? Curtis, of course, does an amazing job every weekday afternoon, noon to one. It is the Rip and Read. Does a tremendous job hosting overnight weekends and, of course, does his best work with me every weekday morning about this time. And I did mention earlier that New York Met outfielder Harrison Bader, who had a big home run yesterday, the Mets in their last 13 games are the best team in baseball. Unbelievable. We're going to talk to Christopher Mad Dog Russo coming up in about 25 minutes. The Mets have now won 10 of their last 13 games after an 0-5 start. But Bader, not just an outfielder for the Mets, but a proud Jew, so proud he wears a huge Star of David on his belt to keep up his uniform pants. And I know, Curtis, months ago you were yelling at me about something. I don't even remember anymore, but it was something about Bader. So you must be very happy today.
So that's like when Max Baer would get in the ring and he would have the Jewish star on his trunks. When he'd be fighting all kinds of opponents many, many years ago, back, I guess, in the Depression years. But anyway, let me hear.
I remember that.
You do?
Yes.
You remember watching the black and white?
Yes. I saw the movie Cinderella Man with Russell Crowe.
Yes.
And he's the guy from Turnip Line, New Jersey, who beat Max Baer,
whose son went on to star in, remember, the Beverly Hillbillies.
Is that right?
Was his son, yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. But anyway, let me get back on track. You mentioned NPR. You mentioned their stick. Next time you have Rudy on, you got to say, hey, Rudy, I understand when Sliwa was fired the first time, because you know you've been in talk radio when you've been fired many times.
Yes.
If you haven't been fired, you're not a pro. So 1992, I get fired. Angels in the Morning with Lisa. She goes her way. I go my way. Rudy's just elected mayor. He says, I want you to come over to WNYC, which is the NPR of New York City. I want you to do a show in the afternoon. I want to showcase the sticks, the TV station and the radio station, because we should not be in the business of subsidizing radio or TV. I said, absolutely, Rudy. I went there. They eviscerated me. They destroyed me for about a year. Rudy then later said, because of you being there, Fox News ended up buying the stick for the TV station, was WNYC-TV. That's how Fox News came about.
Wow.
So even though I was indirectly involved, I took all the incoming from all the liberals and progressives who were attacking me. What are you here at WNYC? Absolute outrage. F Rudy Giuliani. But that's how Murdoch got his TV stick. He bought it. And that's how Fox News channel came about.
You know, what's funny is they run a promo here. And the promo is Sid and Friends in the Morning, ranked number 15 in the 100 most influential, most important hosts in America. And the promo they run is, congratulations to Sid on being number 15, but don't tell him, because in the promo they claim, I've got a huge ego, all this nonsense. But here's where you got me beat. Do you know there's not one story in the last 18 months, since you've been on this show every day, there's not one story that I presented to you where you are not part of the story? Even there, talking about NPR, and you found a way to explain to folks that you're the reason behind Fox News. That is genius, Curtis. Genius.
Because I listen. I listen to what you say. Other guests come on. This is what I'm going to say. They don't listen to the whole program. You got to listen. That's what makes talk radio great, because then there's a flow. Like, for instance, you mentioned the Mamalouk Harrison Bader. His parents, born and raised in Bensonhurst. His father, the Jew, who's like lead attorney for Verizon. His mother, a Sicilian mother. So that's why he still lives at home in Bronxville, because his mother is Italian. Now, normally, if you're born of a Jewish mother, you're Jewish.
Right.
He chose to be a Jew, even though his dad is the Jew and his mother is the Sicilian Catholic. How do you like that?
I don't like that.
Why? But that means you're getting one. How many millions did we take from your tribe?
You're right about
that.
Yes. Very good point. You're right.
Look, I gave your tribe two, right?
Yes, you
Carter
did.
Carter and Hunter.
Yes. One of them just got bar mitzvahed.
That's right.
Carter.
That's Hunter. Carter got bar mitzvah. Hunter. And by the way, he's first cousin to Scott Baio, your friend.
Is that right?
That is right. I'm teaching you about this guy.
I don't know anything about this guy. I know the Yankees got him in that deal for Jordan Montgomery, which I thought was a horrible deal. He had a pretty good postseason. Wait, he got hurt. He was gone, and now he's a Met.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Slowly I turned step by step from the St. Louis Cardinals.
From the St. Louis Cardinals.
You who did not, nor did Wrong Way Lou Ruffino, recognize one of the greatest managers of all time.
Please.
The White Rat, Whitey Herzog. I mean, look. He played baseball the way it was meant to play. Not hitting home runs, punching Judy, steal a base, take the extra base, defense, pitching. Come on. For both Kansas City and St. Louis.
No, listen, there's no doubt, especially those Cardinal teams. He had one guy that could hit the ball out of the park. He had two, actually. They got George Hendricks at one point, and they had the first baseman. What was his name? Clark. Otherwise, he had guys like Lonnie Smith, Kenny Obergfell,
that's right.
Tom Herr, Willie McGee, guys who use speed to win games.
And also, he was manager out of the Kauffman Institute, which recruited sports stars who never played baseball and tried to turn them into athletes like Frank White. Frank White never played baseball before. They turned him into an all-star player. George Brett, Hal McCray, Amos Otis, who they got from the Mets. They made him a better ball player.
That's all the Royals players you mentioned.
That's right. But remember, hey, come on, give credit where credit is due. And by the way, when O'Reilly is back today, I have co-busted him. He has joined the Order of the Knights of Malta, which is there to protect pilgrims who are going to Jerusalem. So Jews, Gentiles, anybody going to Jerusalem, he is now a member of the Knights of Malta. That's why he went to Malta. You had no idea, did you?
No, I'm actually going to play that now for Bill when he's on hold before he comes on the show. But talking about Jews, you know, I witnessed this grilling, if you will, on Capitol Hill yesterday. This president of Colombia, and I can't believe, you know, I mentioned this about an hour and a half ago when the show first started. Binghamton now has a BDS organization. NYU has been overrun by these animals. And Colombia may be the worst example of them all in terms of how the pro-Palestinians have taken over. This was a great school, a beautiful academic institution. It's complete garbage now. And at one point yesterday, the guys on the Hill, Burgess Owens, the former great New York Jet, and one other senator, I guess, actually went to this lady, who is the president of Colombia, and they said, explain this to us. You've got a guy on the staff. He's a teacher. His name is Joseph Mossad. And after October 7th, the day after, or the 2 days after, Joseph Mossad described the October 7th Hamas attacks as, you ready for this word? Awesome. So they said, well, okay, I'm sure he's gone, right? He said October 7th was awesome. You're not going to believe the response. This is cut number 11. Manoush Shafiq, this disgrace, the president of Columbia University.
What truly speaks volumes is the moral compass of Columbia, that this rabid anti-Semite is still on your payroll today.
I am appalled by what he said.
Any consequences?
He has been spoken to.
Stop it right there. The consequences, he's been spoken to. This goes back to Tom Cotton.
Right.
Let's go out, Curtis, like you did with the Guardian Angels, and punch these people across the face.
You and everybody else act all surprised, especially the Jews who fund Columbia University. They love Jewish money, but they hate Jews. What happened? 2007, Ahmadinejad, I'm in the mood for jihad, president of Iran, is invited by the president of the university, Bollinger, to speak before the students. He gets applause in the auditorium. There are students there who are supporting, that's right, Hezbollah, the Iranian revolution. He's a Holocaust denier. For 90 minutes he spoke, and then he took some questions. A student said, hey, how do you treat homosexuals in Iran? He goes, we don't have homosexuals in Iran. Of course, because they kill them when they find them. He was invited to Columbia University, but this goes back to 1968. I heard yesterday you had the columnist of the New York Post on, Michael Goodwin.
No, he's actually on today.
Right. He was talking about the takeover of Columbia, SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, right, 1968.
That was with Brian Kilmeade, yes.
Right. That was Mark Rudd, the white guy. And they took over Hamilton Hall. And then the black students turned to Mark Rudd and all the white students from SDS and said, get the hell out of here. Find your own building to take over. That was 1968. They already have taken over the main square. They were almost in semi-riot form overnight. They're going to take over one of the buildings. It's going to be 1968 all over again.
I don't know about that. I got to tell you something. I saw a horrible story a couple of days ago about Google. And I am guilty of still using Google. I got to start to do a better job of my homework here. Like, for example, I don't play Pink Floyd on this show anymore, even though I love their music. I don't play Eric Clapton on this show. I really don't even play Taylor Swift. So Google, it turns out, had an anti-Israel sit-in a couple days ago. All of them spewing horrible stuff about the Jews. So I'm going, is Google going to do something about this? Well, they did. They actually fired 28 employees after this anti-Israel sit-in. So maybe, just maybe, it's not going to go that way at Columbia. Grilling this president on the Hill, Google firing 28 people. Maybe, Curtis.
I know
I'm hoping people are starting to wake up and see this.
You keep thinking that, Sid. Like Butch.
Well, look at the mayor.
Butch Cassidy,
the mayor
and the
is out there every day.
Oh, please. Hakeem Jeffries, you mentioned Binghamton University, right? He wrote an editorial to the student newspaper defending Farrakhan and his uncle, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, one of the most vehement anti-Semites in the history of New York City.
No, he
did. Yes, he did.
When was this?
1992. Check your damn facts.
That's the guy got
you think he changed?
You.
Who was supporting Farrakhan in 1992 at that time? Eric Adams, swagger man with no plan, going to the mosque in Harlem with Conrad Muhammad, who was in charge. You can't get over on Sliwa. Once an anti-Semite, always an anti-Semite. In fact, Hakeem Jeffries, who in the future will be the Speaker of the House, called every black guy who supported Jews at that time House Negroes. House Negroes.
He actually said that?
Yeah, and now he forgets that. Oh, all of a sudden he remembers Biggie Smalls' rap songs, but he can't remember that he called blacks who supported Jews in Israel House Negroes. Hakeem, I don't forget. I got it. Remember, I got a Xerox machine as a brain
this
here.
This is why you are so, I mean this sincerely, whether you win when you run for mayor again or not.
I got to win to save the city.
I agree with you, and believe me, no one has done a better job endorsing you for the last year. You're not even running yet than me.
Oh, wait a second. Sid, today you got to listen to the Rip and Read. It's Wag the Dog 3. Wag the Dog 3, because you were right on the money. 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, I heard your Instagram post, and I thought you were in a bomb shelter when you were doing it because you wanted to stay quiet.
Right.
Your wife and your son were sleeping, Danielle and your son.
Ava, too. Ava's
right,
home right now,
okay,
too.
So you're very quiet. I thought you were in a bomb shelter.
That's what Greg Kelly said. He's like, is that really Sid's voice?
Right. And then soon after, John Katsimatidis texted me and said, it's a movie. It's a movie. And I've been doing every day Wag the Dog 1. I did Wag the Dog 2 with De Niro and Dustin Hoffman. And today I'm doing Wag the Dog 3 featuring Noam Ladin.
Noam Ladin
as the interpreter, as an Israeli general, had a huge gathering of press. In the Negev Desert, there was this missile, a cruise missile that had been sent over by Iran, you know, over the 350 missiles, drones, and ballistic missiles and cruise missiles that supposedly were launched. By the way, half of the Iranian missiles launched in Israel were duds.
Duds.
But anyway, this is what the general was saying to explain this incredible armada, the largest since the Spanish armada was sent to take over Great Britain. Listen to Noam translating for what the Israeli general was saying.
Iran attacked the state of Israel with 350 launches. This was blocked, and Iran failed in its attack. It was blocked thanks to capabilities built up in the state of Israel over years in the defense industries. It was blocked thanks to a historic air defense battle. In the end, four missiles hit Nevatim base without causing damage. Thanks to our operational success on Saturday, we now have many options for how and when to act. We will act properly and at the right time, and any discussion on this matter is unnecessary.
Now, is that true?
Yes. I asked Justin Ellick to translate it. He hasn't studied his Hebrew yet. Noam Ladin knows Hebrew.
Yes, he does.
And I'm doing Wag the Dog 3 today because it involves every country. And by the way, Joe Biden, who is what? What was he, in Scranton or somewhere in Pennsylvania, suggesting that his uncle was eaten by cannibals in World War II in New Guinea. Hey, you idiot. The person who was eaten by cannibals was Michael Rockefeller, son of Nelson Rockefeller, 1961. It would have been the richest young man in the world. And instead, he wanted to follow the aboriginals in New Guinea. And they put him in a pot and they had him for dinner. What an idiot that we have as president of the United States, who's talking about his uncle eaten by cannibals in New Guinea in World War II, but the military came back and said, no, his plane crashed in the Pacific Ocean. This guy is president of the United States. You got to listen to the Rip and Read. Wag the Dog 3. Sid was right ahead of everybody else. And I am Dino De Laurentiis, creating the greatest movie that was never made. Wag the Dog 3 today at 12.
77 WABC.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
No, I get by with a little help from my friends.
Hookah, chaka, hookah, 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 chaka, hookah, 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 chaka, hookah, 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 chaka, hookah, hookah.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. What on a feeling, I'm high on believing that you're in love with me.
Great song right here, Hooked on a Feeling. Been a great show already. We've had Thomas Sullivan running once again for Assembly in District 23. You got to vote for him. And Curtis, still to come. Christopher Mad Dog Russo, he's coming up momentarily. John Catsimatidis, the great Bill O'Reilly, Michael Goodwin, and maybe one more surprise. You know, it's funny. So I have two different guys that drive me to work all week. I got Levi. Levi drives me. He's a local guy. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, and if we have to go to the airport, for example, he'll take us. And then I've got Gene, my man Gene, who drives me to work every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I don't know, it was like last year, Curtis says to me, you're not going to believe this, but I was standing on the corner on the Upper West Side, and your driver, Gene, happened to see me, and he drove me to work. I think it's happened now once or twice since, but that's easy because Curtis is so recognizable. The red beret, the red satin jacket. But it looks like another member of my valued staff was in the car with Gene this morning. How'd that go, Justin?
It was delightful. Very quiet ride. He didn't try to start any conversation. This was before I even knew who he was, but
right.
But, you know, I don't like my cab drivers to really talk to me that early in the morning.
That's it. You can say good morning.
That's it.
The first minute or two we can talk, and then that's it.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. Until we pull up out in front of the building here, and he goes, oh, my God, get out of here. You know, he's got an accent, obviously, but, yeah. You know, so he pronounced, yeah. You're Alec, you're Alec.
He calls you Alec,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah, and
like
I'm like.
With an A.
Yeah, and I'm like,
such
yeah.
a great guy.
I'm like, so I just thought he was a listener. I said, do you listen? And he goes, no, I'm Gene. I'm Gene.
Sid's driver.
Yeah. And I go, oh, my God.
That's unreal.
I go, you're in the wrong borough.
That's great. That's great. We've got to take a short break. When we get back, big news, of course, John Sterling announces retirement this week. That led to a Mike and the Mad Dog reunion on Chris Russo's TV show High Heat on the MLB Network. We'll get some traffic and come back with the aforementioned great Christopher Mad Dog Russo talking John Sterling and all things sports.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Entertaining and informative.
Oh, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
Good morning. How are you today, pal? Okay?
I'll tell you, I thought of you after I heard the news about John. And first, let me wish John well publicly for his wonderful career. And I hope he enjoys his golden years. Has a nice time. I'm telling you, dog, you should take a bow for this because I've said this. I said it on my podcast, and this is true. The guy who really got those home run calls started was you because you were the one who started just wearing out the Sterling calls, and then he started doing these home run calls, and I remember you playing them one after another after another. And I can tell you this, the call that I remember the most, the one that was my favorite, wasn't even a home run. It was a triple. It was a bases clearing triple by Bernie Williams in the eighth inning against Tampa Bay. And he went crazy with Bernie Goes Boom.
Bernie Goes Boom!
And you must have played it 25 times that day.
I remember
wearing it out. And that's the one that I remember first more than any of the home run calls was that Bernie Goes Boom triple that he hit. And I'm telling you, folks, the guy who got this whole thing started was the dog.
Oh, what a great song here, Bruce Springsteen. That was Mike Francesa, and he was on Christopher Mad Dog Russo's great baseball show. It's the best baseball show out there today, High Heat MLB Network. They reunited this week, Mike and the Mad Dog, after John Sterling announced his immediate retirement on Monday. Saturday will be the ceremony. So with that said, his own amazing show every weekday afternoon on Sirius XM, Mad Dog Unleashed, the TV show, and man, has he saved ESPN. I mean, ESPN, basically a cesspool of liberals and America haters. And here comes Russo walking in and saves all of it. I know Stephen A. Smith gets some credit, but as far as I'm concerned, he's the greatest sports guy ever, my dear friend Christopher Mad Dog Russo. Good morning, dog.
Hi, good morning, and I'm very fortunate that I thought of Mike the day that Sterling, when we found out about John the night before, so I said, you know what, I don't want to bother Susan, Michael Kay, you know, he's up in Toronto, might be tricky, Mike would be perfect, because we did love those calls. I remember the Tampa call that Mike referred to with that comeback against the Rays, like an eight-run, eighth inning. I don't remember me going crazy on it, because Mike liked Sterling as much as I did because he was a Yankee fan. And when Sterling gave you the Yankee win, and the Yankees won a lot in the 90s, Mike loved it. So I think it was more of a combination, but he was theatrical and a lot of fun. He deserves that on Saturday, but it was good to have Mike on. He was sharp as a tack a couple of days ago. And good morning, Sydney. How are you today?
Good morning to you. And it was great. You know, I love you, but you guys, of course, are super together. You know, I did a thing on video, too, here. I mean, I do politics, obviously. You know that, Chris. But I do a fair share amount of sports. Every day we talk sports. I'm a diehard Ranger fan. I can't wait for the Rangers and Caps on Sunday. Love the Knicks. They'll start against Philadelphia on Saturday. We'll talk about the Mets coming up momentarily. But I explained on the video that when I was at the Fan, I was there right after that great Joe Torre run when they won it in 96, 98, 99, and 2000. I was there, for example, for the 0-1 loss to Arizona and the 0-3 loss to the Marlins when Sterling really became prime time. And I said on video, I said, we would have fights. We'd have fights at the Fan as to whether or not John Sterling was too cheesy or entertaining, and it made me angry. He was very entertaining, and let's not forget, we want to win baseball games. We want to win championships. But baseball is a form of entertainment. Is that not right, dog?
100%. Critics didn't like Sterling because he's not a technocrat on the air. He's going to, you know, the balls and strikes, you know, where the ball is hit, how far it goes, it's high, it's far, and it's a pop up the shortstop. You know, those kinds of things annoyed the critics, yeah. And I understand that. There's a part of that that I do understand, and he couldn't see at the end. You know, a ball he thought was a home run is a ground rule double and what have you. But he's entertaining, and if you're a Yankee fan, you got a complete kick out of him. And, you know, the Yankees put out a big statement. Again, he's not, you know, Gary Cohen, who's a tremendous play-by-play guy, is a completely different listen than Sterling is. Sterling is for the Yankee fan who wants to enjoy a Yankee win as much as he does. And Gary's for the baseball fan who wants to listen to a ball game outside on his porch on a summer day with lemonade. I mean, it's a different mindset.
Yeah.
But both have, you know, listen, both are great in their own right. But and I'm not a Yankee fan, but I got a kick out of Sterling. And I think that is the most important legacy of him. He was fun to listen to. Even when the Yankees were going bad, it was fun because he'd get frustrated. Because John was one of those guys that the Yankees started to lose games and didn't hit, and their pitching was lousy. If you put the games on radio, you could tell he was annoyed and frustrated. And that was part of the fun, too. If you hated the Yankees and they were in a losing streak, he was annoyed, and it was funny. Yep. So you looked at that way as well.
60 more seconds on this, and we'll take a quick break, come back, and talk about how these teams are doing here in New York. But now the pressure is on my friend Chris Olivero and your former station, WFAN, to replace John. I mean, you can't just throw anybody in there. In fact, look, I'm not in sports anymore for the most part, so the two guys I saw in the New York Post, I have no idea who those guys are. Me, I know Ryan Rocco. I like that kid. He's done Yankee games. He's actually very, very good. But would you agree that now the pressure is on to make sure they get somebody good?
Yeah, I think John put him in a tough spot there. He probably would admit it. I mean, you know, to quit on March, or, you know, to think about quitting in March and then decide to quitting, you know, April 15th, probably should have handled it better and maybe give the FAN and the Yankees a little more time. I know Justin Shackle well. He does a good job. He used to work at Mad Dog Radio, so I know him. I don't know the other kid. But you're right. It put the Yankees in a tricky way here. It sounds like they're going to rotate, right, the announcers, the play-by-play guys. And I'm assuming that Susan will stay. I haven't followed it that carefully. But John gave him a bad timeline. You're 100% right. John did not, you know, he should have said to himself in January, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 84, 85 years old, and then they could have organized it a little more properly. It's a little disorganized right now. So you're 100% right. I guess they're going to rotate it, Sid. You would know better than I would.
I don't know, no. I just know that a guy in his 80s decided to leave, and I only wish the President of the United States would do that. Anyway... Let's take a short break. I'm a Trump guy. We'll take a short break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about the Mets, the Yankees, and a little more with the best sports guy ever, the great Christopher Mad Dog Russo. He's coming back.
Is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Remember this, and this is a key part. The guy who is the radio voice is really the guy who is the soundtrack of a baseball team. And he is the one fans remember, and he's the one that city remembers, because in October, the TV guys go away. Network guys take over. They never have the great call. They never have a dramatic playoff call or a World Series call. They don't work those games. The radio guy works those games. And Sterling worked every one of those great Yankee wins and great Yankee World Series wins.
The Yankees are one out away from another World Championship. Now Rivera is set. And the 0-1 swung on, hit in the air to deep center. Bernie back, away back. He's there. He makes the catch. Ball game over. World Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be.
Well, this is like a WFAN reunion. This is Sister Golden Hair, Surprised by America. Happens to be Eddie Scazzeri's favorite song ever. How do I know that? I guess I know that all those years working with Eddie. Another good point there by Mike Francesa on Christopher Mad Dog Russo's great show about the postseason, dog. He nailed that one, didn't he?
He sure did, and he's 1,000% correct. I mean, it's a job that I'm sure Gary Cohen's going to deal with it, because he gave up the radio to do the TV, and over a 5.5 month period, you'd rather do the games on the television than you would, you know, for instance, on the local radio. But once the postseason begins, if you're a team that is annually in the postseason, as the Yankees certainly were, you know, forever, they're always in the postseason, and last year notwithstanding, you want to be behind the microphone, because that's when people are really paying attention to the big games. So. And John got all those big games. And, you know, if you do the TV and you leave radio to do the TV, you don't get those big games. And that's probably a bothersome aspect of making that switch off the radio, as, say, Gary did. But, hey, you know, it's TV for 6 months. I understand it. You know, Michael Kay in the same sort of situation for the Yankees, because he's not longer doing radio. And he had to miss the November call when Jeter hit the homer against Arizona, so he doesn't have that either. But hey, the bottom line is, John was a hell of an announcer. There's no question about it. Perfect perfect for the Yankee fan, which is the bottom line.
Agreed. Yeah, that highlight, by the way, was that one hurt. That was Mike Piazza flying out to Bernie Williams, yes, that fourth and final Torrey championship after winning two against Atlanta and one against San Diego. Let's talk about the Yanks so far this season, though. They came back last night. They got the win. They were facing a three-game losing streak. Home run for Stanton, home run for Soto, getting big hits. But I'll tell you, you know, the shocking part of the early season for baseball, dog, Yankees are 13-6. That's the best record inside the American League, a half a game better than Cleveland. The Metropolitans have won 10 of 13 after an 0-5 start. The biggest shock to me is when you check the team ERAs around baseball, only Boston, Cleveland, and Kansas City have better ERAs. The Mets and Yankees, both teams, top five pitching in Major League Baseball. I'm shocked by that.
That's a good point. I didn't even know that myself. So that's a good point. I know the Mets have won a lot of, you know, had some timely hitting late in the innings and have had some good starting pitching. I mean, you know that the hitting will catch up. Pitching, obviously, early it's cold, damp. The weather's been terrible in the Northeast. So as a result, you're going to have maybe some better pitch games. All these hard relievers, teams' offensives are not adjusted to it. I mean, to me, the two big stories in baseball, one is the injuries with the starting pitchers, and number two would be how bad the Rockies, the Marlins, and the White Sox are. I mean, those three teams, I mean, the Marlins and the Rockies have won four games apiece, and the White Sox have won three. I mean, they are three very, yeah, very... I mean, the Marlins are a disaster. Their ownership situation, it's a mess. I mean, the White Sox changing, you know, the way they go about doing things. Reinsdorf's 85 years old. You know, I mean, they're a second team in town. They're trying to rebuild. And, of course, the Rockies never can figure out a way to get it right out there in Denver with the altitude and everything else, never have any pitching. But those three, to me, is another storyline of how bad they've been. And then, of course, you got all the starting pitchers. It's got nothing to do with pitch clock. That's absurd. That's one of the dumbest arguments we've heard. I do think Tony Clark was thinking maybe with a lot of discussion regarding, you know, coups with the Players Association, everything else. Maybe he wanted to get his players centered on one specific issue and get them away from all the other things that might be bothering them. And a pitch clock would do it. But the whole world knows it's not the pitch clock. Pedro Martinez came out and said that. That's all you need to know. Verlander came out and said that. That's all you need to know. It's not because they went from 20 to 15 seconds. I mean, geez, these kids throw 100 miles an hour when they're 12 years old.
Right.
And all these AAU and Little League managers and high school baseball coaches who think they're going to be the next Casey Stengel go out there and let these kids throw as hard as they can for as long as they can. Oh, and by the way, throw in a good Uncle Charlie with the curveballs. I mean, and as a result, these kids, the arm is going to go eventually because it can't withstand it. That's the issue with the arm injury. But you're right. The Yankees and the Mets have had good pitching. Mets did a very good job off a terrible start. It looked like they were going to have one of those awful years when they played that first couple series against Milwaukee and Detroit. They were terrible. And then they bounced back. And the Yankees, you know, Soto makes a big difference. It was a big win yesterday, Sid, with that run comeback in the ninth inning. That was a little bit of a gut check. Nice job in Toronto. They get Cole back. Division will be good. They and the Orioles should have a good run there down the stretch. Now, they play a lot early in the year, which I hate because, you know, Texas and Houston, for instance, has already played seven games. They only play six more. The Yankees and the Orioles will play seven games late April, early May, and they only will play six more. Drives me crazy with the balanced schedule. You got to live with it.
All right, two more minutes to go. Great job there. That's why Christopher Mad Dog Russo is the best baseball guy in the country, and I said that right to Brian Kenny's face. I want to get to basketball. I did a video a couple of days ago on Jalen Brunson, and I can't say enough good things about this guy. And I know the Knicks have had some pretty good point guards, guys like Stephon Marbury. But to me right now, the only point guard in Knick history better than Brunson, after only 2 years, mind you, is Frazier. That's it. Now, look, Knicks have had some great offensive players along the way. 10 feet to the basket. I've never seen anybody better than Bernard King, ever. And Carmelo can score a bunch, too. But this guy, Brunson, this is something else. The last couple of months, what he's done. Now, look, I wanted the Heat to win yesterday. I don't want Joel Embiid in the first round of the playoffs, so I really don't. But Jalen Brunson, would you agree, outside of Clyde, next best Knick point guard ever and an unbelievable player?
and give Leon Rose credit. I mean, he did a great job at that signing. We saw glimpses of Brunson when Doncic was out a couple years ago against Utah in the first-round playoff series, and Brunson played great. Yeah, he's done a superb job. That was a tremendous signing. Yes, I would rank him right, as you said, below Clyde. And he's, you know, he's a, and listen, I don't know if he's a great, great player, you know, but he's very, very good. And, you know, I'm not sure if he can carry a team to a championship by himself. I think the Knicks actually got up. Now, as it turns out, Butler might be hurt. But if Butler was not hurt, I would have rather played Philly. I don't trust Philly. Miami with Spoelstra, their culture, game five, played all the way to Denver last year in the finals. They beat the Knicks. Hero's there now. He wasn't there last year. He was out. I actually think that Miami would have been a tougher out if Butler was able to play, and who knows now with this. He got this sprained MCL. I think the Knicks, the thing that would worry me a little bit about the Knicks is that I don't know if the Knicks have another gear. You know, he plays Thibodeau every game like it's game seven, and good for him. Look, last week against the Bulls is a perfect example. You know, Brunson played 77 games. I mean, Butler played 60. That's all you need to know about that. And, you know the Sixers could have a different gear. You know, you think Miami might have a different gear. Some of these regular season teams that underachieve some, they might have another spot they can get to in the postseason. And I don't think the Knicks do. I think the Knicks will bust your rear end. They give you everything they got. But this is who they are. They're not going to get any better. And I think these other teams that they might play could, and that would scare me a little bit. But I do think they got a hell of a chance to get to the conference final. I think they could easily, win two long seven-game series in these first two rounds. You know, maybe they play Indiana instead of Milwaukee, for instance. They're not beating the Celtics, I don't think. But, I mean, the Knicks, it's going to be a fun series against Philly. Embiid, he's not himself. He hasn't played a lot. He looked tired as hell last night, but he's a 7-foot center who shoots three. So should be a good series. I'm looking forward to it. Knicks Sixers in a playoff series. We haven't had that in a long, long time. 100 miles apart. 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Then into the Lakers Nuggets at 8:30. I mean, that's a good NBA night in New York. I'll be completely into it. And I would say Knicks in seven, Sid.
I will take it. I love what you said about the Heat, too. I remember last year I kept picking Miami in the postseason, and these guys here at my station on my show were saying, why? You mentioned Spoelstra, and you left out your great buddy, who as long as he's still there, it's always tough to beat the Heat, and that's Pat Riley. Pat Riley is still 100%. Running that show. And if Riley is there, that anywhere he can win. Anywhere.
100%. I mean, Riley's an all-timer. He's one of the all-time greats. He's a great executive, and he obviously was a great coach. Still looks good for whatever he is, 78, 79
yes,
years old.
He does.
I mean, he's incredible how he looks. He kept himself in shape, his hair, everything. And I love Riley. You know, Riley's my old-timer. We all know that. Never talks to me now because Mike and I killed him when he left town there in 95, whatever it was, with the fax thing when he left the Knicks, which drove us crazy. But the bottom line is, the Heat injury with you got a couple of injuries right now that are a problem. You know, no Zion tomorrow night. I don't know what Butler's going to do now. Doesn't sound like it's very good for them. Maybe they get by Chicago anyway, but they don't test Boston without Butler. So it's a situation where, the Celtics got a lot of scars. I mean, they got a lot of scar tissue. You know, they blew it 2 years ago, Golden State 2-1 lead. Last year they lost to Miami. They never should have lost to Game 7. They were down 3-0. A lot of scar tissue for the Celtics, and they're by far the favorite. So we shall see.
They're too good. Tatum and Brown and, the other guys, too. Holiday just signed a big contract, and White and Porzingis has regained it in Boston. They're too good. As you are, Chris, this was an amazing, amazing appearance. Thank you, as always. It's always an honor and a big deal for me to get you on my show. Thank you so much, Chris Russo. I love you. Thank you.
All right, Sid, thank you. Knock him dead. Appreciate it.
You got it. There he is, Christopher Mad Dog Russo, the best. Any sport, man, nobody better. Check him out, Mad Dog Unleashed on Sirius XM. And, of course, High Heat, 1 p.m. every afternoon on the MLB Network. We'll take a short break. Big guests still to come, including John Catsimatidis and Bill O'Reilly, the great one, Bill O'Reilly, both this hour. Keep it right here.
Don't mind saying, I just can't make it.
Sit in Friends in the Morning. 77 WABC.
Listen, I would eliminate the funding for NPR tomorrow. That's the right thing to do. We shouldn't be in the business of funding NPR. If you're a leftist, why wouldn't you be willing to use taxpayer dollars to fund a propaganda outlet for your view?
A child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver.
That's right, John Katzimatidis now has his own entry music, like Mariano Rivera, Enter Sandman by Metallica. Anytime Katz is on this show, he gets Katz in the Cradle, which is a classic. John Katzimatidis, what can I say? He's not just my boss. He's like a second father to me. I love him dearly. He has done a tremendous job at this station, making WABC great again. He hosts two of his own terrific shows, Katz and Cosby, 5 p.m. every weekday afternoon. And that Sunday morning show, the Katz Roundtable at 8, is the only show on the weekends you have to listen to. I mean, they're all great. All of our programming is great, but his show is outstanding. And he's all over the news. But I want to start with this NPR stuff, John Katzimatidis, and get your thoughts on Ted Cruz blasting these people. This guy Berliner, he actually quit yesterday because all he did was criticize the lefties, and they suspended him.
Well, I think that's a little bit stupid. But going back to what Senator Cruz has said, I believe in the First Amendment. Anybody, any station can say whatever they want, except yell fire, I guess. But it should not be publicly funded. I mean, it should be privately funded. And the government should sell it to a private enterprise. Let them sell it to George Soros. I mean, he's buying up all the radio stations. But the government should not be funding programs like that. It should be private enterprise, and they do have the right to say anything they want to do. And Sid, we just got back from Las Vegas, me and Chad and Emily Margo. We took Kevin Drosch was with us and Dan Herschel. And it was the international broadcasting show. They had over 90,000 people in Las Vegas. I can't believe the amount of hotel rooms in Las Vegas. I can't believe. I mean, Las Vegas every year becomes more and more beautiful.
Yeah.
And to be able to host 90,000 guests, my God, I mean, that is phenomenal. And we stayed at the Wynn Hotel, and it
beautiful.
Was beautiful.
Yep.
Steve Wynn did a wonderful job creating that until they, I guess, whatever they did, they threw him out of Wynn. And he's the creator. He's the one who created
yes,
it.
Yes, they did throw him out. And I stayed at that hotel many times. By the way, we're only a couple of months removed, John, from Vegas hosting the Super Bowl, where they hosted a lot more than 90,000 people. So they do a great job. You know, you mentioned George Soros. And I'm aware that he's bought stations at Odyssey, and now he's talking about buying Cumulus stations and other stations. And I know this is a tough fight, John, but I was talking about this with Chad moments ago. But the only guy that can fight off George Soros, assuming he wants to fight, is you. Are you up for that fight?
Well, yes, we are. I mean, we're up to getting the voice out of common sense. And I do believe in common sense. I've always believed in it. By the way, I started using that word common sense about 3 years ago. And guess what? Everybody's using that word.
Yes.
Too bad I couldn't patent it. And, I would have made $1 zillion if I got a nickel every time somebody used the word common sense.
Especially in this city, they use those two words all the time. I want to do one more story on news, and that is this came out yesterday. CNN boss Mark Thompson says the network faces existential crisis, plans eventual switch away from cable TV. Now they're talking about possibly doing a subscription-based streaming model very similar to YouTube and TikTok. I did see Chad's response on your text last night. I thought his response was excellent. But you actually talked on this show, my show. You broke it on my show months ago. You were entertaining the idea of buying CNN. Is that still a possibility?
Well, you know, we look for opportunities. We don't buy at retail, and that's part of our success. We buy things that are broken, and we fix them. And again, that was part of my success. CNN is broken. I mean, it's an everyday word. It's an everyday word, CNN. Everybody knows it worldwide. And guess what? They have like something, I forget the number, 400,000 viewers.
That's it.
That's nothing. It's Trump change. I mean, it's crazy. It is nothing, but the name recognition is worth the money if the station is operated right and common sense prevails. Again, common sense prevails.
You're right. Same thing.
But Las Vegas, as I said, was great. We met with FEMA. You know, WABC is part of the Department of Defense and FEMA, and FEMA is going to be spending a lot of money to beef up our site in New Jersey where our antenna is, and they're going to make it nuclear-proof, which is, I hope we're not waiting for a nuclear war, but they're going to make it nuclear-proof.
Right.
We met with the FCC in Las Vegas, and we had a lot of great meetings. And Kevin Drosch and Dan Herschel had a lot of meetings how to upgrade, getting additional antenna systems. And
wow.
And you know where our object is? We want WABC to be bigger than the BBC, and right now we're broadcasting to 173 countries and 50 states, and we're not marketing it yet, but we have 149 countries in the month of March actually listen to us.
Wow.
Wow. It's
huge.
I've heard it say 173 countries, but not Antarctica.
Not Antarctica. So that does – so when you were out there in Vegas, John, you have been doing a really great job. You and Chad – and by the way, I love this kid, Kevin Drosch. He's a great program director. But you and Chad doing a great job of keeping AM radio alive, which I believe is a necessity, especially talking about defense. Well, part of the discussions in Vegas about AM radio, and secondly, with all this growing and the tremendous job you've done with WABC, is an FM antenna for ABC still a possibility?
Oh, it's a possibility, but it's going to happen sooner or later. The other thing that I wanted to say, Frank Pallone from New Jersey, Congressman Frank Pallone, and a Republican, Congresswoman Rogers, did a joint thing in Congress that they want AM radio to be preserved.
Good.
Because some of the electric car companies want to get rid of AM radio.
They already have.
Guess what? The consumer is getting rid of the electric cars. And it's crazy. Sid, the other big story in the New York Post today is about that we are going forward with small modular reactors in the United States. It's a green energy. What is small modular reactors? Well, it's the nuclear reactors that are usually run our submarines, usually run our nuclear aircraft carriers, and we are retooling them to run small cities, where a small modular reactor can run a city of a million people or half a million people for 67 years, and the Germans, the European community, the French now consider it a green energy. So it's a green energy, but it's not going to happen tomorrow morning. It's going to happen over the next 7 to 50 years. The conversion of oil to our oil and fossil fuels into nuclear energy That would be part of the greening of America. And that's the next energy supply. I mean, anybody that thinks that a few windmills and a few solar cells are going to drive America, I'll sell them the Brooklyn Bridge.
No, of course. We've already seen that in Germany. You know, they had a rough summer a couple summers ago. There was no wind, and nobody had any air conditioning. I swear to God. Tell me about Bob Procopio and why you made him the man for this at United Nuclear Group. Why is he the guy?
Well, Bob Procopio has run the energy division of American International Group, AIG, very smart guy, knows everybody in the energy business, and he's going to be running things on a day-to-day basis, which is, one smart guy. My rule in running our companies, I try to hire people that are smarter than me to run our company.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Now, I mean, one guy that you would say is smarter than you because you love him so much, and I do the same thing with my son Gabriel, is John Jr. And when you consider now Christides, D'Agostino's, you've got United Nuclear Group, you've got these other oil groups, energy groups. I mean, he was named the president, God bless him, just a couple of months ago. There's a lot on his plate, a lot.
Well, he's a smart kid. He's been doing this. He's only 31 years old, but he was doing this for since he's like 14 or 15 years old.
Yep.
Going around the company and caring about the company, and that's what I love. Look, we built a tremendous company. We have so many divisions. It's so big. It is hard to get a next generation to be able to maintain a conglomerate like that. But John Jr. is very capable of doing that.
He is a brilliant kid and a wonderful kid, too. He's got a great disposition like you and Margo. I love him. Well, listen, congratulations on everything, John. You know, no one's happier for you than I am. Well, maybe Margo, John, and AJ, but outside of that. So congrats on all this exciting stuff. Welcome back from Vegas, and I'll see you on the fifth floor one of these days soon.
I wish you a happy birthday yet.
Tomorrow.
I'll wait till tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I love you, John. Thank you so much. This was great. Thank you so much.
Take care.
My man, John Catsimatidis, and a lot of exciting stuff going on. Seriously, really exciting stuff with the Red Apple Group and certainly the Red Apple Media Group, which is doing some amazing things. I'm not going to lie to you. I had no idea when John and Margo bought this station that we would have this success. And when you talk about my success, and I've been a big success the last year, you cannot argue. You can hate me, but you can't argue. And I can't help but give a lot of that credit to John, Margo, Chad, and all the folks here at Red Apple Media. We'll take a short break. When we get back, still lots more to do. You know, it's Thursday. That means the great Bill O'Reilly is stopping by this hour. Keep it right here. Sitting Friends in the Morning on a Thursday.
Turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never did. It said, I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. We'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then.
Sit in Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Come on. You stole my numbers. You stole my car.
You know, we just had John Catsimatidis on, and he was talking about how the station is on 149 to 173 countries. So, my mom lives in upstate New York, you know. She spends half the year in Florida, like every good Jew. And half the year in upstate New York in a fancy, very fancy estates up in Conneaugh / White Lake. So we've got, friends there for 40 years. We've been there for over 40 years. My mom and dad bought that place. Some of them I really like. Some at this point I can't stand, but that's fine. That's with everything in life. But one of the people I actually really, really, really like is a kid named Matt Goldstein. He was a little younger than me. He's got a couple of other brothers, Justin, Russell. Love his parents, Barry, Nadine. Anyway, he listens to the show every day. Lives in Jersey City. I see him all summer long. He's got two great kids, Jesse and Danny, both college girls. Got a lovely wife. And he listens to this show every day. And he was telling me, he texted me last week. He was listening live. He was in Mexico City. And as John was pointing out how many countries were in all over the world, he texted me and said, by the way, I'm listening right now from Trinidad. So Matt Goldstein is one of the guys that is out there listening, not just in New Jersey, but other countries around the world. I will take a short break. Talking about countries around the world, Bill O'Reilly was just in Malta. That's right. He was in Malta. He's going to tell us about that.
Oy. This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Friends, how many of us have them? Friends.
77 WABC.
So the reports this morning are that after Iran put together that staged attack, once again, United States fingerprints all over it. On Saturday night, you know, I really thought that by Monday, Bibi would send a message to Iran and the rest of the world. You just can't do that, whether or not the United States and other countries were in on it or not. So the reports are that Israel was ready to actually do something, whatever that means, because the United States has said, be careful if you retaliate at all. They were ready to do something on Monday, but they opted not to. Now they're waiting till after Passover. When did we get to the point in the world of war where we tell everybody when we're going to do something? Like, we knew about the Iran attack because Biden knew about it and Turkey knew about it 2 days before. So now Israel is saying, nah, we'll have our Passover Seders, then we'll do something.
Oh, my God, you got to be kidding.
I swear. Crazy.
It's like the woke war. It's
yes,
like
I mean, Bill O'Reilly, no, nobody knows more about the history of this country and war than Bill O'Reilly. Bill, what happened to the days?
Who recognizes holidays?
Is this crazy, Bill?
Is this my introduction today? No, the greatest guy of all time business? What happened?
Well, hold
that?
On. Put Bill on hold for 1 second. Let's stop for 1 second. He was the greatest. He still is the greatest. He'll always be the greatest, whether it's 9 p.m. weeknights on WABC or his great website, BillO'Reilly.com, the best interviews, the best columns, the best guests, or his killing series, which is now 13 rich in. Bill O'Reilly is still the greatest of all time. Now, Bill, what is going on?
All right, number one, before I get to that, and I have very good information for WABC listeners this morning, congratulations to you and everybody at WABC for the March ratings. I just got finished analyzing them. Very strong across the board. I mean, there isn't a weakness in 24 hours on the station. It is really going against the tide because radio listening in America, generally speaking, is on the decline because of the handheld machines, because of the smartphones. That's what people go to. They don't not turn the radio on, but not WABC. And the reason is that WABC zeroes in on local news and tells people how to fix their lives. I mean, that's as simple as that. And the other radio stations are all over the place. They carry syndicated program that doesn't connect with people and on and on and on. You're the dominant morning guy. You know, the sports people are fine. I was listening to Mad Dog. He's entertaining. But that, you know, that's not going to change anybody's life. WABC's information will, so let's get into the arena.
Well, let me stop you for 1 second first, because you just brought up something very important. You talked about Doggy was entertaining, but it's not going to change anybody's life. And I remember, I have to bring this up now, I was called into my program director's office down in Miami, and I was talking about this upcoming election between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, and my program director said to me, you realize where you work? Yes, I said yes. He said, well, the Dolphins have a big game against the Buffalo Bills coming up. I said, I know, but, you know, I've got two kids, and I just saw a bunch of people shot outside a cafe, bombs going off inside a soccer stadium, people murdered inside an amphitheater. I don't know. I feel like guys my age may care about that, too. And on a serious note, I decided way back then, over a decade ago, that I couldn't do straight sports talk anymore. I couldn't talk about the Dolphins and Bills or Mets and Pirates when people were dying in the streets here and abroad. And I think that decision was probably a good one.
Yeah, for you it was a good one, but I don't begrudge people wanting to escape and wanting to get away from the horror of life by going into sports or movies or whatever, and it's worthy. But you had a higher calling, and obviously it worked out. So let's take a look at this, because this Iranian thing has not been reported accurately, and so I'm going to set the record straight because I have the best intel sources in the country. And the reason I have the best intel sources in the country is because I wrote a book called Killing the Killers. And if you want to understand what is happening in the Muslim world and why so many of these people want to kill Americans and Jews, you got to read the book. And it's not a hard read. I mean, every page you're going to go, whoa. So what happened in Iran is you are right and you are wrong. Okay, so Rosenberg is right and he's wrong. It was not an orchestrated attack, but Mossad and the CIA and the NSA, the National Security Agency, knew about it in advance. How did they know? Because they have assets all over Iran. So we have people inside, and so do the Jewish intelligence service, Mossad, inside the Iranian government. And we pay them an enormous amount of money. And that money is routed to a place where I was last week, Malta.
Is that right?
Because Malta's banking laws are the most secret in the European Union now. Do you know that?
I did not.
That had bypassed Switzerland. Switzerland will give you up under pressure. Malta will not. So anyway, the intel came out because you can't just launch hundreds of drones and missiles without people knowing about it. You know, everybody's got to know. And that got back. And that's why the Israelis were prepared for it. And their shield knocked down 99% of the ordnance. So that's a fact. That happened. But Israel and the United States didn't want it to happen, I mean, as far as a policy is concerned, because things could go wrong. People could die. However, there has to be a response, because you're absolutely right on this one. If Israel says, okay, go ahead, shoot at us, and then we're not going to do anything, then more people will shoot at you. It's like, and I hope Hasty is listening in Albany tomorrow. Hey, if you don't punish criminals, they're going to commit more crimes, you pinhead. All right? That's not hard. I used to teach high school. If I didn't punish the miscreants in the class, I could not maintain order. Call Hasty. Maybe you should go back to high school. Oh, my God. It's just unbelievable. But anyway, let's get back to Israel. You have a situation there where Netanyahu is under enormous pressure from the United States, from Biden. Okay? So Biden does not want a world war. He doesn't want a revival of the jihad. And he doesn't want to get China involved, because Iran sells an enormous amount of oil to China.
Correct.
So there are a lot of things here in play. So tomorrow, the Israeli Air Force could go bomb the hell out of all the Iranian ports. That's not hard. They could do it. And Iran couldn't stop them. But if that happened, then China and Russia, because Putin, anybody against us, Putin is going to support. Then they would come in on the side of Iran, and you would have this unbelievable worldwide conflict that would drive every stock market down, The economies would implode in a lot of places. It's a trigger mechanism. Okay. So what is the solution?
Well, keep it right there then. This is great. Bill O'Reilly's got the solution. When we get back, I'm going to play for you a cut from Trump's former ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, on what you just talked about, Bill O'Reilly, the oil. Then we want your solution. How do we fix this mess between Israel and Iran? If anybody knows, it's Bill O'Reilly. Keep it right here.
Entertaining and informative.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
I really believe that while the Israeli citizens were scared to death running to bomb shelters and watching things explode in the sky, that this son of a bitch, Joe Biden, was behind the whole thing. How about that?
I was kind of skeptical, but as the stories are coming out, you know, about Biden's conversation with Turkey, using Turkey as an intermediary to negotiate with Iran. Yeah, I mean, there's some truth to it. Look, if this ends up being true, this will be an absolute outrage and a scandal the likes of which I haven't seen before. The fact that America is negotiating for Iran's attack on Israel, 300 missiles, ballistic cruise missiles, UAVs. I mean, look, it's great that Israel was able to intercept all of them. But you know what? Easily, some of these things could have gotten through. And some of these things are huge, huge missiles. And one of the reasons why I think Biden would do this is because 2 years ago, they gave up their entire strategic oil reserve. Now, America has this massive oil reserve for emergencies. And Biden said, you know, it's an emergency because we might lose the midterm election. And gas was very expensive. And so, you know, he released all. We don't have any left. We have nothing left in the reserves. And so the idea that somehow there could be a war with Iran and oil could go up in price and Biden can't do anything about it, to him, that's how he loses the election. You know, another couple of dollars in the price of oil and Biden's finished. And I think this guy is that calculating and that political relative to, you know, being principled, that he might actually do that. So, you know, we need to see this more in more detail. But you could be right. And if that's the case, what an embarrassment for our country. Not only are we not standing with Israel, but we're negotiating with Israel's enemy with regard to the size and shape of the attack.
There he was a couple of days ago on this show. Donald Trump's former ambassador to Israel. Long Island native, was like Bill O'Reilly, but he went to Florida. The great David Friedman. Bill, what do you think about what Dave had to say there before you give me the solution on how to fix all this?
I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
No. It just doesn't make if you understand the pattern of the Biden administration, they would not take a chance like that. These are scared people.
They wouldn't take a chance?
No, they wouldn't negotiate a attack on Israel in a furtive manner.
Why not?
Because if it's exposed, they all go to prison. That's why. They're scared people. These aren't the plumbers of Watergate.
Well, hold on a second. But it's not as if the Bidens haven't done stuff before that if exposed, they'd go to prison. They've been doing that for 30 years.
That's a grift that didn't have national security implications. I mean, this one, it's just inconceivable to me.
Okay.
I know these people. Biden, number one, is so discombobulated from day-to-day events, he doesn't even know what's happening.
Well, then it's Blinken, or it's Sullivan, or it's Kirby, any one of those
Blinken
animals.
Blinken and Sullivan are running the show. And neither of those men, to me, would ever put their own butts on the line for something like that. Okay, so maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't seen any evidence at all to accuse the Biden administration of colluding with Iran to attack Israel. None.
Well, you know, there was a phone call, though, on Thursday or Friday from Biden to Turkey. And then, wow, in amazing fashion, the U.S. vessels were there in plenty of time, hours before these drones hit, to shoot these things out of the sky. I would disagree. There's plenty of evidence.
No, but it's two different things. As we just discussed, the U.S. knew it was going to happen, so they moved assets into position, as anybody would. But to contrive it and to get involved in some kind of secret plot to make it happen is a totally different thing.
And you think that the Biden administration is above that?
Not above it. It's they're scared people.
They're not scared.
Wouldn't take the
no, they're
chance.
Not scared. They're not scared. They're not
oh,
scared.
They, oh, you yes, they are. They if you look at their foreign policy, it's so timid. It's ridiculous. I mean, look at Afghanistan. Look at Ukraine. Look at the way that Biden handles China. They're scared.
You know, you could make the same argument, and you're probably right. You can make the same argument for Iran because, you know, on one hand, with their proxies, Bill O'Reilly, they're tough guys. Hamas will go and rape and murder and behead and kill, and the Houthis will do their thing. And then, of course, you've got Hezbollah still firing rockets as we speak. But this opportunity from the homeland, from Tehran, that was a pretty lame exhibition. I think you'd agree. So,
oh, yeah, that made Iran look ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's why the Israelis haven't really vented back yet. So let's get on to what will most likely happen. And it has to do with Donald Trump, interestingly enough. So when Trump was president, and I asked questions when I was in Malta last week, I had breakfast with the defense minister of Malta. That was before the Iran attack. And I said, do Maltese like Trump? And he said they liked Trump's foreign policy because he kept the peace, but they don't like global warming stuff because they're all, in Europe, they're nuts about global
right,
warming.
Right, right,
all right. Everybody's got a little windmill on their head. So that made perfect sense to me. When Trump was president, he did not want any nation-to-nation conflict. He did not want foreign wars because it was bad for business. He didn't want it. And he was against the Iraq war, and he made a big deal out of that, and he called Bush the younger a moron, and, you know, on and on and on. Trump did not want that. All right? What Trump did, and what he would do if had he been reelected, because the world would be very different if Trump was in the White House now and not Biden, was he carried out wartime expeditions silently. The way that the Trump administration annihilated ISIS is that is the classic that I think Netanyahu's going to follow. He already has. So this whole thing started because the Israeli government killed 7 Revolutionary Guards, including Soleimani's successor. They assassinated them, okay? And Israel certainly justified in doing that because the Revolutionary Guards in Iran were in Syria causing trouble with Hezbollah and Hamas. So if you're going to attack our country, we're going to get you. And that's what they did. That's what lit the fuse for the Iranian attack against Israel. Well, keep doing that. Keep doing that. And if you can get the mullahs, go get them. Because that's a sieve over there in Iran. It's not like Moscow where nobody ever sees Putin and he doesn't come out. You can't get him because you don't even see him ever. Okay? The mullahs are going, you know, they're guarded, but their security is not anything like the Russians. So you degrade their ability to do anything by selective targeting, and you don't make a big deal out of it. You just decapitate them silently. That's what Trump did. That's the basis of Killing the Killers, my book. And he did it so effectively that ISIS was wiped out in the Middle East, had to go to Africa.
Yep.
So if I'm Netanyahu, that is my blueprint, rather than causing a worldwide war, because that's what it would be. I mean, the jihad would ride up, and then we'd have bombs going off everywhere. You couldn't have the Olympics. China and Russia would be funding people that you don't want them to fund. I mean, it would never end. You've got to do it surgically. And if Trump wins in November, that's what will happen again. That's what he will do again. Whereas Biden has no plan, no clue. He doesn't know what to do. He's being told what to do. So you have a commander in chief who is like George McClellan in the Civil War, doesn't know what to do. And that's why the North almost lost until Grant came in. I hate to be a pinhead on a historical front, but it's the same thing. Biden doesn't know how to wage war in this modern time. He doesn't know. So, you know, this is way beyond most people's ability to really calibrate. You know, A leads to B, leads to C, leads to D. But Netanyahu's a smart guy. He gets this. So I don't think you're going to see Israeli planes in the air bombing Tehran anytime soon.
No, you won't. I agree with you 100%. And I think you just outlined it beautifully. And that's why I missed you last Thursday. That's why I introduce you the way I do every week, as was the best, still is the best, will always be the best, because nobody puts it out there and explains it better than you do. In the final 60 to 90 seconds, day three of this Trump hush money trial, they got zero jurors Monday. They got seven on Tuesday. He gets a day off on Wednesday. He's in court Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday during the week. Listen, it's been a complete disaster. The judge yelled at Trump the other day because he muttered under his breath. I mean, this judge, what Judge Mershon is doing, Bill O'Reilly, I'm sorry. I haven't spoken to one legal person, from my wife to Idala to Takapina to Dershowitz, who doesn't think this judge is a disgrace, an absolute disgrace.
Listen, Trump can't get a fair trial in New York City, and two-thirds of the American public know it. A poll came out yesterday. All right, they know, because when you give $80 million to E. Jean Carroll, when you fine Trump almost $500 million for something that nobody understands, a loan to a bank, everybody knows, even if you hate his guts, that Trump cannot get fair treatment in New York City. This merchant should have recused himself a long time ago, but why would he? Because he wants to get Trump. The judge wants to get him.
Right.
And here's the kicker. Why didn't they move the venue to Long Island or Dutchess County or Westchester County? Why?
It's a good question. I spoke to his attorneys and other attorneys, and it was not for a lack of effort. They couldn't do it.
No. So this is, sorry for the cliche, a kangaroo court that everyone knows, and it besmirches the image of New York City. Like, you go in there, and they're going to get you if they don't like you. It's not about the jurors, because Merchan can regulate the tone. He can overrule objections, sustain objections, frame it, bring people in that shouldn't be in. There's another woman come in. What is she doing there? It's not the same case. So everybody knows Trump can't get a fair trial. I said last night on TV, on News Nation with Cuomo, I said, if I were Trump, I'd be worse. I would be in chains.
I know.
I'd be screaming so loud.
Right.
This is not justice.
He's actually been pretty good for a quote-unquote caged animal.
That's because he's asleep all the time. But when he wakes up.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this. So this guy is so smart. I mean, he may be silly in certain ways, but again, from his trip to East Palestine, Ohio, that's when all this started. Before the convictions, it was that trip. Then you go to a couple of weeks ago, Biden is at Radio City raising money, which Trump doubled, by the way, a week after, while Trump goes to sit with Stephanie Diller, whose hero cop husband was just murdered. And then Tuesday after court, he's up at Jose Alba's old bodega, hanging out with the folks in Harlem, who gave him a ringing applause, a huge endorsement. How smart is Donald Trump?
Yes. You know, he's waging a campaign that is effective right now. But look, it's hard to feel sorry for Donald Trump. I think everybody would agree.
Yeah.
It's hard. But at this point, I kind of feel sorry for him.
No, they have. Between the AG James, the DA Bragg, and these judges, they've made him a sympathetic figure. They have. It's unbelievable. Hey,
yep.
Bill, I missed you last week, and you come back today with a grand slam home run. Your Israel stuff was absolutely great. I love you. Thank you so much. A great appearance.
All right, Sid. Good numbers in March. Congrats.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon. Bye.
Can't wait. There he is, the great Bill O'Reilly. Boy, he was on the money. He explained it really perfectly. He did. And I hope you had a chance to hear that. If you didn't, go back and listen. If you want to know what happened and what Israel should do next, I have not heard anybody in the media since Saturday do it better than Bill O'Reilly. That's a fact. We'll take a short break. Michael Goodwin is going to join us. He's a great columnist for the New York Post. Keep it right here. My last show at the age of 56. I know, Lou. I know. My, like I said earlier today, I'm LT. Tomorrow, I'm Byron Hunt. I'll be right back.
Sit in Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
And I never thought I'd feel this way. And as far as I'm concerned, I should ever go away. Well, then close your eyes and try. Feel the way we do today. And then if you can remember, keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure. What friends are for good times and bad times, I'll be on your side forevermore. That's what friends are for.
I love this song. My dad loved this song too. That's what friends are for. I've got a friend since high school. His name is Alan Wengrofsky. He's listening right now. Not easy to spell, I know, Lewis. Wengrofsky.
Well, I wasn't trying, actually.
Yeah. Real Jew like me, you know, Rosenberg, Wengrofsky. He's a diehard Ranger fan, accountant, great kid, smart kid. We've been friends for 40 years, and he listens every day. I love that when I have, like, old friends who I haven't seen or talked to a heck of a lot. And I talk to Alan once in a while, but when I hear they listen, I do love that. And that's what friends are for, man. They come at you and I'll listen to the show. I love you. Happy birthday. Tonight, for example, a bunch of my friends getting together as we do monthly. Keith Kantrowitz, Anthony Carone, Governor David Patterson, Michael Kemper, Big Mark Oranger, a bunch of us. And that'll lead up to the special day tomorrow with my beautiful family, my beautiful wife, Danielle, my two great kids, Ava and Gabriel. But tomorrow, you know, it's going to be an emotional show. Because every year on my birthday, I play a message, a voicemail, that my father sent to me literally 3 months before he died in the summer of 2020. He called me from his hospital bed, and he sang happy birthday to me. And I kept it. And every year on my birthday, I play it. I think I'm lucky in that while I have to play a message from my dad, who I miss desperately, my mom is still here. In fact, and you guys know this already, we celebrate the same birthday. I was born on my mother's 32nd birthday. I'll be 57, she'll be 89, and she'll be on this show tomorrow. So in that respect, I'm lucky. I've got to play my dad's message. That sucks, although I'm happy I've got it. But my mom will be on this show live tomorrow. But I'm telling you right now, you Lewis, wise ass, you Justin, wise ass, you too know him, you son of a bitch. I'm telling you right now, and you can bet $1 million on this. Mm-hmm. At no point,
yes.
Listen carefully, write this down.
Uh-huh.
At no point during tomorrow's show will I cry.
Uh-huh.
No, come on.
Come on, no. Don't even waste the energy to laugh at that.
I'll put my money down the opposite of that.
No, we're already... No, what I was doing was writing down times of when it's going to start.
Right.
That's what I think we should do. Right. And we don't even know... Right now, the three of us, even Justin doesn't know how long the open will go.
Right.
So it's like a Jeopardy thing. You don't know what the question is going to be. You have to wager. Mm-hmm. So we have to go. So I'm saying like 6:09, 6:12.
Right.
So out of the open, it'll be, you know, your father will come on and then the song will play. And I probably within 30 seconds, you're going to start crying.
Yeah.
So you have to gauge it from there.
Right.
So we should all come up with three times.
Okay. Right. So the first one doesn't count because we know that's happening.
Of course, naturally, right.
Right. Well, it should. I mean, the 6 o'clock one 100, should.
Yeah, 100. That's an automatic.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Just have the dead air alarm ready to go.
Because it'll be crying and he's going to face Third Avenue.
Right.
He'll
turn around
and look pensively at like how life has gone right now.
And then you're like,
I love the turnaround and facing Third Avenue. That's my favorite thing. Yeah.
When you just see kids back.
He's like looking out into the horizon. Like, what are you looking at? Like you're looking at like Third Avenue. It's disgusting out there.
Justin will run back in and go, it's all right, right? Is he okay?
What do we have?
And then he goes back to the other.
The mics die on us again. I don't know. then I'll hear like a.
He's okay, right?
Yeah. Like a second back in.
Oh,
and then,
the crying. Oh, the dad just played. Okay, that's it. All right, got it. Okay, let me know when we're in the break.
But yeah, $1 million, sure.
Let me just say this, and I mean this with every fiber in my heart, every fiber in my heart. I mean this when I say this. I hate all of you.
Better than nothing.
Keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure, that's what friends are for. In bad times, I'll be on your side forevermore. Oh, that's what friends are for. Keep smiling.
77 WABC.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
No, I get by with a little help from my friends. Walking with gorillas down my street. From my window I'm staring while my coffee goes cold. Look over there, there's a lady that I used to know. She's married now or engaged or something, so I'm told. Is she really going out with him? Is she really gonna take him home tonight? Is she really going out with him? Because if my eyes don't deceive me, there's something going wrong around here.
The great Joe Jackson, is she really going out with him? Michael Goodwin, along with Miranda Devine, the two best columnists in the country, New York Post. He's going to join me next. He just wrote something entitled, Hit the Mullahs and Hit Them Hard, Israel. And he's got five key takeaways from Iran's failed attack. And it's not just Israel, it's this city. We just spoke with Noam, I should say, during the news about Colombia. In fact, as we speak, out of the corner of my eye, I can see Fox News, some young kid with a yarmulke, clearly he must go to a school here, talking about Columbia University students. We're hearing these death to America, death to Israel chants. And I'm all about the First Amendment. Nobody gets away with more on radio than me. Nobody. Now, I know where the line is. I don't cross it. I've been there before. But I go right to it. There is nobody and I say this with complete confidence, there is nobody in radio who does what I do. Nobody. So I love and I appreciate the First Amendment, but if we could add a wild card team in baseball and buck tradition, there's got to be something we can do. I don't think it's okay to scream death to America, death to Israel. I don't. That's not a First Amendment right. It's got to be hate speech. Now, I know it's not. I'm married to an attorney. I understand all that. Maybe we should change it. I don't know. Because what I want to do is what Tom Cotton wants to do, which is get out of your car and beat the living daylights out of these people. He actually said that. That's why he's a great politician. Republican Arkansas, get out of your car and beat their ass. I've been saying that for 6 months. Beat them up. Cares about their First Amendment rights. They have made Columbia into a horrible place. It's not funny. It's horrible. Horrible. Burning flags, death to America, death to Israel. This was one of the great prestigious academic institutions, not just in New York, in the country, maybe in the world. It is a joke that these people are allowed to do this, and this president sits on Capitol Hill and tells me that a guy who called the October 7th attacks awesome is still getting paid, but she spoke to him. Spoke to him. Take him in the back and beat his ass. I'll do it. I'll do it in 2 seconds. Put Mossad in front of me and I will beat his ass. I'm tired of it.
Sit in Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Senator, you've been criticized for saying people should take matters into your own hands to get them out of the way. Do you stand by that tonight?
Of course I do, Laura. I mean, what do you expect people to do when they've got to get to work? They've got to pick up a kid. Maybe they're trying to take care of an ailing parent. Heaven forbid, they're trying to get a loved one to the hospital. All of these pro-Hamas lunatics can, I don't know, get a permit and protest in a park and wave around the little Hamas flags if they want to make fools of themselves. But they have no right to block traffic, especially on major highways or city streets when other people are trying to go about their business. And yes, what the police should do is get there promptly and arrest these people and throw the book at them if they're allowed to by their often left-wing Democratic mayors. But in the meantime, these lunatics shouldn't be surprised if their fellow motorists get out and remove them from the road forcibly so they can go about their business, because they have no right to be blocking public streets.
Well, I called him a hero yesterday, and I'll say it again today. That's Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton. Says, don't be surprised if civilians get out of their car and forcibly, which means physically, remove these people. You know, Michael Goodwin is the best columnist in the country. He is. New York Post. And he's been kind of sitting on hold for about 10 minutes. But what's funny is that people were so appalled by what Cotton said. Yet, standing on a university, burning flags and screaming death to Jews and Americans, they're okay with that. But how could Tom Cotton say such a horrible thing? Can you fill me in on this, Michael?
Well, good luck with that, Sid. look, I think Cotton is on to the rage that a lot of people are feeling. I mean, you know, when you see those videos and pictures of people carrying their luggage, getting out of a car or a taxi on a highway that's been blocked and carrying their luggage through a field to try to make their flights, people can't get to work. It really shows that the government itself is failing the honest citizens. It's the dishonest ones who are getting all the breaks, as though somehow they have to be understood. And if you are just an ordinary person who pays your taxes and wants to use a public facility to fly or drive, you're out of luck, because the government has decided that, and I don't mean necessarily the federal government, but many city and state governments have taken a kind of laissez-faire view of these demonstrations. And I think it's out of hand, and it's this. It's the same lesson over and over and over, that if you appease them, you will get more of it. It's true in international affairs. It's true in protest control. You know, and the NYPD used to be excellent at this kind of stuff, but now they constantly get sued, and therefore, and for kettling, using their bicycles to corral people, basically. That was something that came out of the last round of protest. And so lawyers, being risk averse, will tell them, well, don't do that anymore. Okay, we won't do that anymore. Well, then how do we control them? Well, you can't do this, you can't do that. And so this aggressiveness of the far left and their use of the courts to penalize the police who try to do their jobs makes everybody skittish. And so you have this mayhem where the idiots are running the asylum.
Ron DeSantis, Republican governor down in Florida, once said, run them over. And again, people were disgusted with that. He's a hero to me, too. Eric Adams, nothing. Again, I'm going to use a word you're not going to like, pussy. But that's what he is. You know, he just caves in every time. It's the people like DeSantis, even the governor out in Texas, Abbott, Tom Cotton. Those are the heroes. Those are the people that will help save us one day, hopefully, from this impending doom. Now, Israel, they're in trouble, too. I read your column. It was great. Hit the mullahs, hit them hard, Israel, and five key takeaways from Iran's failed attack. So for folks who haven't read it, Michael, explain what you meant in this column.
Well, the first is that you know, Joe Biden's advice to Netanyahu to take the win and then the threat that America won't help in any kind of response because Biden would consider that an offensive move as opposed to defense, which seems to me ridiculous. If you go on defense and you stop the other team, then you get the ball. and you're not going to play after that? I mean, it's silly. This is war. And the idea that Iran gets a free shot, that they can send more than 300 drones and missiles, and just because Israel and with American help and with Saudi help and Great Britain and France shot down or eliminated all of those devices before they could do any damage. I mean, it's an amazing defensive example there. But
unless you believe what I believe, which is it wasn't that amazing because they knew everything beforehand. Everybody knew everything beforehand, especially Biden through Turkey. It's still a great feat, don't get me wrong, but not nearly as amazing. But I just had Bill O'Reilly on moments ago when he contends that Biden needs to be careful because if Israel goes in and goes nuts on Iran, then China gets very upset, Russia gets very upset, and that could be the start of World War III. Me, I don't care. I want to go bomb Iran. I want to bomb Rafah. I want Israel to do what they have to do. But there are some that are concerned that if Israel gets a little too crazy with this, that could be the official start of World War III.
Well, perhaps. Maybe we're already in World War III. I mean, it's already this low boil in various places. And certainly we don't wish to see it widen, but at the same time, this appeasement that we were talking about before with the demonstrators applies in spades to Iran. And they tried to kill thousands and thousands of Israelis. They failed. But because they failed, they don't get any credit, nor do they deserve any mercy. I think Israel has to draw a line, and thankfully, I think Netanyahu will do it. He has made it clear that there will be a response and that it will be at least commensurate with what Iran tried to do. Now, I don't know specifically what that means. I mean, it could be everything from the conventional weapons, the factories producing the drones and the missiles, to the nuclear targets that Iran keeps enriching uranium, getting closer and closer. And after last weekend, I think it's pretty clear, if there was any doubt before, Iran will use whatever weapons it has. I don't know. I have no reason to believe that Biden knew what was coming. I see no evidence of that. I've not heard that before. I mean, I do know there were messages back and forth about urging restraint, et cetera. But I don't think what Iran did was restrained in any sense. I mean, they aimed to kill tens of thousands, if not a million people, with so many things aimed primarily at major population centers, right, as well as some military targets. I don't think Iran deserves a break.
I don't either, but I disagree with you. I do think there were conversations between the United States and Turkey. I believe the United States knew everything. I believe that almost every country knew everything. And they went after civilian neighborhoods in an effort to kill thousands, but rather different sites. So we'll disagree there. But I do agree with you that, yes, that they should come back and hit Iran. But I got to ask you about this city, because no one knows more about this city than you. Nobody. You and Curtis. You know, you got this sham trial going on right now with Donald Trump, where the attorney general of this state and the district attorney should be fired today. They're humiliating. It's horrible what they've done. You got crime all over the place. You got a mayor that beats his chest and tells us, you guys are nuts. I don't know what movie you're watching. Things are going great. You know, you got a governor that couldn't care less. Bill reform is still bail reform. You know, got the subways as hard as Michael Kemper tries. You really can't ride them after a certain time without going at risk of getting yourself killed. I mean, it's become and a complete embarrassment, has it not?
Oh, it has. And just to take your first point about the Donald Trump trial, just think, if Lee Zeldin had been elected governor, he pledged to remove Alvin Bragg. He said he would do that the first day in office. You don't hear Kathy Hochul say a word about this, right? So, I mean, that's the difference when people vote and don't vote. I mean, the turnout in these elections is pathetic, and people don't vote. And more of the people who would tend to vote for a Lee Zeldin are leaving New York. And so the future doesn't look so bright if people are going to keep voting for the people who create this chaos and allow this mayhem to happen. I mean, you know, we had this thing with the Post has done a lot on Carl Heastie and his refusal to go along with increased penalties for shoplifters who violently attack workers in these pharmacies and other retail outlets. And he finally agreed to go along with language that reminded me of what Ilhan Omar said about 9/11. Some people did something, right? I mean, that's how Heastie talks about these crimes, as though they're not really significant, that the criminals are just misunderstood, and we shouldn't get so worked up about this stuff. To me, it is so out of touch, and I don't understand why anybody in his district would ever vote for him after this. If you want safety in your district, Carl Heastie is your enemy. He doesn't care about safety. He's made that clear. He makes fun of those who care about it. And so I don't understand the voters of New York, my fellow citizens. Wake up.
He's a black guy, and I hate to say this because people don't like to hear it, but he's going to get votes, bottom line, just like Alvin Bragg and whatever. It's just I'm tired of saying the same thing over and over again, but race certainly plays a part in those victories, and you would think that safety would matter more than skin color, but it just doesn't. It's a sad world. It really is. A sad city, a sad state. Columbia is disgusting, and we need to fix things quickly. Michael Goodwin, you are the best. Thank you for hopping on this morning. We'll do it again next week. Thank you so much.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Michael Goodwin, New York Post. He's really good, isn't he, folks? He really is good. And De Niro reminds me, too, women being punched in the face. Over 50 women, 50, have been punched in the face just walking the streets of New York City. That ain't perception. A broken nose, Mr. Mayor, is not perception. It's a broken nose. That'll do it for the Thursday edition of Sit and Friends in the Morning. Lou Ruffino, Justin Ellick, Noam Layden, great job. Go out there, enjoy your Thursday. God willing, as Gene would say, Justin, We'll all be back tomorrow for a Happy Birthday Sid Friday morning show. Till then, from all of us on Sid and Friends in the Morning, to all of you, peace!
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.